So we need a you're listening to Around Comics episode 2.
We do turns?
Yes, we're doing turns now.
Wait a second. So this is Around Comics episode number 2. So
yeah.
That wasn't it, but this is nice. This is Around Comics episode number 2. I put the wrong emphasis on. Go with it though.
This is Around Comics.
This is Around Comics. This is Around Comics. It's like I've never been on this show before.
This is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, and I'm Christopher Naismith.
I am here.
We speak for the first time.
I'm Sal.
I'm Tom. Hi.
And our special guest this week.
I am Ryan Brown.
Is he special?
Yeah.
Like short bus.
I feel pretty good right now. So
feels
good about it.
I have some continuity questions because we have rebooted Around Comics.
Yes.
So can we call Ryan a returning guest? Is that?
Oh, that's a good question.
Is he in canon?
I think we have to spell his name differently.
We probably should discuss this off air.
Yeah.
Probably off air discussion.
Well, no, we don't do anything off air.
Well, Ryan Brown, if you do remember, is the amazing.
This is going to turn into an interview of Ryan Brown.
No, I'm just introducing.
Because I'm just ready. Not that interested.
Any question?
In
his childhood, yeah. I know that's where you're going with this.
No,
I know.
Incredibly talented artist and
you
writer
were a child once, weren't you, Ryan?
What was that like?
Let me tell you.
Ryan does God Hates Astronauts and Blast Furnace, and is it public what you're working on now?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh yeah, and you're also working
Big
at IDW.
Dick Comics.
Yeah. Big Dick Comics for IDW.
Yeah.
I'm doing a book called Big Dick Comics for IDW.
He's totally going to make that his next
heavily
comic.
Heavily censored. I'm doing a book for IDW called Smoke and Mirrors. That's written by the amazing Mike Costa.
Nice.
And we'll be soliciting next month.
Is he amazing or is he just your really good friend?
No, he's pretty average in every single way except for writing.
Okay.
Amazing writer.
I am glad he is here though because I do want to talk some more shit about Paulo Rivera.
Okay.
I don't think we've fully covered that subject. Last time we did.
Well,
no, I'm just kidding.
Did I tell you that he saved my life once?
No, you did not mention that.
Yeah,
this is turning into an interview.
Yeah, it is.
He's leading us down this path.
This is one of the best stories you've ever heard.
All right,
I'll
be the judge of that.
I don't want to talk about me, but did I ever tell you how Paulo Rivera saved my life?
I say that pretty sarcastically.
Oh,
I apologize. No, so Paul and I were roommates. In college, and I was sleeping, and he was awake, and I started choking in my sleep, and he yelled,
"On a ham sandwich?"
He yelled, "Ryan, wake up!"
And you did.
And then I woke up, and I didn't choke and die.
He saved
me.
So he saved my life.
That's
we talk about this often.
That's
very important.
Wasn't nearly as exciting as I thought it was.
Yeah,
be.
No,
so
no,
are you
no. It was a really boring story.
Are you sort of beholden to him now? As
oh,
his
I owe him big time.
Slave?
I have a life debt. Yeah, big time.
What was it in? I can't even remember the movie. I can't think.
Logan's
of it.
Run.
No, no, well, not
big,
Logan's
big trouble
Run.
In China.
Like keep him. Keep going. Keep going.
That's your stock
Thank
answer.
You.
This is compelling.
You had a 50. Oh, sweet. So, we'll come back to Logan's Run and how Paulo Rivera saved Ryan Brown's life. Happy holidays, guys. This is our December.
Rounders.
Oh, yeah.
All
the life.
I thought you were going to say Killdozer, but that works too.
Yeah. No. I don't remember what they called it. The Jewish sort of.
Life debt?
Nah, it wasn't a life. I don't know. Forget it. Just
Jewish
move on.
Life debt?
Whatever. So
yeah, I don't know. That's the name of my band, actually.
Jewish life debt.
Yeah.
Let me text my wife. I'll ask her what a Jew, if there's such thing as a Jewish life debt. All right. See if we get. She's gonna write back like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Well, isn't that a response to half of your texts? Anyway?
Like, what are you Jewish life debt?
Oh, so is everybody having a happy holiday so far? You digested your turkey?
Yes.
No,
yes.
My holidays have sucked so far.
Yeah, you've had a rough holiday.
I'm not going to get into that.
No. But you've had not a great start to it. But Thomas, you're glad to be back in Chicago for the holidays?
Yeah.
All right.
You were a child once, right?
Let me tell you once. Did I ever tell you about how Ryan Brown saved my life?
Well, we'll get there. We've got to spend enough time together, and I will.
Well, I am going somewhere with this. I figure it would be a nice heartwarming tale. What's your favorite comic book or comic-related present that you've gotten for the holidays? I mean, you can go all the way back to childhood.
I'm going to go with when I was a kid, I had all the Superpowers action figures, and I liked to have them wrestle. And I really wanted a wrestling ring.
Nice.
I wanted, like, the WWF branded one. But my dad made a wrestling ring that was probably, like, 1,000 times better out of, like, materials with his own hands. And I was disappointed that it wasn't,
wood.
Like, the branded one, though, in hindsight.
This isn't the cheap
plastic.
He built
one.
You one out of mahogany.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like real ropes.
And in hindsight, that was a great gift. At the time, I was like, oh, this isn't like the officially branded.
Thanks for nothing,
the sweat from his labor had stained the canvas.
Yeah, Hulk Hogan doesn't come with this one.
Yeah, what is this? But that was a good one, so I could have like a
Did you ever
flash
ask
wrestle.
Him to make you another one?
No, it lasted forever.
That oh, you still thing. Have it?
I don't have it now. I don't have my action figures wrestled, nor do I have action
Well, no,
figures.
But I didn't know if maybe you hung
no,
on to
No, I didn't save it. It's a cherished memory only.
Okay.
Sal?
It's probably in the attic.
Oh, fuck. I don't know. Honestly, I don't really remember. The funny thing is I am probably the easiest person as a family member or a friend to buy Christmas gifts for because
Hint.
I have very
what?
Hint.
No, I mean I like comic books. I like very, you know, simple, like if you look at anything science fictiony or fantasy
knives,
world
swords,
yeah,
leather
you know, well, especially when I was a kid or a teen, like Dungeons and Dragons, anything in that world. And then as I got older it was like I owned a Harley, so you know, yet no one ever bought me anything Harley Davidson. But I don't ever see – people just seem to forget or don't pay attention to the
Your
things
interest,
that I
–
Yeah,
which,
my
which,
own my
which
interest.
Which you write about, you
yeah,
talk about.
Yeah, that I spend all the time doing. No one ever seems
so
to really
– Really
so I don't. When I was a
someone
kid,
someone needs to make
Jesus,
you a wrestling ring with their own hands.
Yeah, I would. Yeah. I would fucking appreciate it, Tom. I wouldn't have been. No, I don't. I don't really remember. I don't know. I don't really remember. You can't spring this kind of question on me, man. I need time to search through
we'll
my
come
memories.
Back.
We can always come back.
Come back to me.
When,
at the end of the show, I'll figure it out.
When I was four,
I can't remember rounders in the Jewish life debt. Let
there
alone
is no Jewish
20 years.
I'm going to say Jewish life.
Or Logan's Run. You just, no memory.
When I was whenever I was 14 years old, my dad, who never really kind of grasp my interest in comics
well,
or sci-fi.
You were a huge
kind of
disappointment
stuff.
To your family.
We talked about this before. I'm a huge disappointment to my family.
Start there.
But whenever I was 14 for Christmas, my dad bought me Uncanny X-Men number 95, which at the time was, you know, and still is a kind of a landmark issue. It's Death of Thunderbird, and it's the second appearance, or actually third appearance of a lot of those
right.
characters. And that was like this moment whenever it was like, okay, because my dad bought me a comic, kind of an expensive comic for Christmas. And it was kind of like him saying it was okay to be a comic book fan. What I found out like a couple years later is that he spent like $50 on that one because he didn't want to spend the $100 on X-Men number 94.
Yeah, cheap bastard.
And I was like, oh, damn. But
hey, I once got a private dance by a stripper dressed as Wonder Woman. Does that count?
That counts.
Yes.
That
was it during the holiday season?
That would, yeah, I think it was around New Year's.
Unfortunately, that dancer was Ryan Brown.
Sorry, it wasn't better.
Yeah. No, it was.
How about you, Ryan? Any Christmas presents that you can kind of think back on?
Well, this is like supposed to be the story of my first wrestling ring. Is that what I'm doing?
Mm-hmm.
I did get a wrestling ring for Christmas once, but I think it was WCW. Which was the lame wrestling.
I know.
And when I was in a
WWF. Did anyone buy the WWF one?
I don't know. I don't think so. Just kids dreamed about it. It's always the most dreamt about present.
It's the Tickle Me Elmo.
I think I got a used one at a garage sale years later.
Best comic gifts. About 6 or 7 years ago, a friend got me Big Damned Hard Boiled for Christmas. Which was something I hadn't asked for, but something that I love, and is way too large to fit on any bookcase that I own.
Is that the hardcover of Hard Boiled?
It's Hard Boiled at original art size in black and white.
I didn't even know
with no text.
I've never heard of that. I didn't know it existed.
With no text.
It's like an artist edition.
Yeah, it's like a coloring book edition. Yeah. It looks like a huge coloring book.
Came with Jeff Darrow. He comes to your house.
He's still working. He gives you a hug and a handshake, and then he hands it to you.
My original Hard-Boiled issues are one of my most prized possessions in all my comic crap that I have in my house. I just love that book.
You actually talked about that. You had a flood in your
and found I
garage,
lost them.
That was like the one thing in my basement.
I didn't know that I had packed them away somewhere in my crawl space. They had been for years. I didn't know, and I thought I had lost them. And then I had a flood, and I had to clear out my crawl space. And lo and behold, I found my Hard Boiled issues. But I love that book. They're not worth anything. I don't think.
It's all what it's worth to you. And it's you actually bought one of the last conventions that we were at together. You bought a Jeff Darrow piece, and I'm pointing at Ryan.
I did. And it's the first real piece of original art that I've ever bought. And it will never be trumped, no matter what I get. I mean, it's one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Is it like Shaolin Cowboy?
It's Shaolin Cowboy fighting Big Guy and Rusty.
Yeah.
Nice.
Drawn by Jeff Darrow.
I think I saw that. Yeah.
I probably showed it to you.
Yeah, you did. That was a great piece.
Totally amazing.
I have a sketch from him I got a few years back. A smaller sketch he did of Shaolin Cowboy. And it's just, he's friggin' amazing.
Yeah, he is.
I've got a Rusty
at home, and eventually I'll frame.
And one of the nicest guys. If you ever if you ever see Jeff Darrow at a convention, go up and talk to him and get a sketch from him. His prices are unbelievably reasonable.
He's
supremely talented. One of the guys that I don't think gets enough credit in the industry outside of the industry. You know what I mean?
He's an artist.
Yeah, absolutely.
Real pro's pro.
Yeah. Real. He's a man's man.
He plays football the right way, Tom.
Yeah, he does his art the right way.
He's one of my favorites of all time, and I've spent years, just like literally years, probably 5 or 6 years of talking to him at every comic convention that I see him, and he never remembers me. But since I bought that piece of art earlier this year, he remembers me every time I see him.
Oh, yeah.
And now we're friends.
You didn't just buy art. You bought a memory.
That's right. Exactly. I bought friendship.
I bought
friendship. So if you ever want a comic artist to be your friend, buy something from them that's expensive.
Buy their stuff. Yeah. And I tell you, his daughter
you'll be their best
friend. Absolute sweetheart, and she does sketches at conventions.
She's terrible.
No, I'm just kidding.
She's actually not.
She's actually pretty darn good. Yeah.
No, she is. I was just being
this is a Darrow piece. Jeff Darrow?
It's written by Moore. Moore.
Big letters. Moore.
Speaking of Moore, should we jump into that?
Jump into what?
What?
It's
Watchmen 2.
Yeah.
Ooh, what's your
point?
Point five. Well, I don't know. It's a prequel,
right?
Is it a prequel or a sequel?
It is a prequel.
First, let's say that it was not confirmed. It was Bleeding Cool. It was a story on Bleeding Cool. They're saying that people have confirmed it to them, but not officially, that Andy Kubert is going to be drawing some Watchmen 2 project.
According to them, he's going to be drawing one of the four prequel miniseries. And people are freaking out about this online, as you would as you would kind of
what?
Guess. Yeah, I know. I know. Big
people online freaking out.
Big shock there, but
click, outraged.
Winky. I'm kind of looking forward to it.
It could be good. It could suck. It's just like anything else.
It doesn't matter. It's
listen. I love Watchmen as much as anyone, and who gives a fuck? Like, I mean, either you like it or you don't. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't change anything. It doesn't. Like, outrage and, who fucking cares? It's a comic book. It doesn't change anything in the world.
You know what? They made a sequel to the Blues Brothers. You guys,
it was terrible.
Are you aware of this?
It was terrible.
Yeah. Does it change the Blues Brothers?
Yeah. What does Dark Knight 2, does that affect your appreciation of
not
at all. Dark Knight?
Well, I'm a Dark Knight 2.
Dark Knight 2.
I'm a fan of Dark Knight 2. Yeah. One of the few. But
one
I think
of the few.
I think it's boring.
But does Holy Terror make you not like
Holy Terror? Well, we can get into that in a minute. Holy Terror changes things. It's a game. It's a bit of a game changer.
It's going to change your future purchases.
Yeah, it might.
Oh, that's a whole other conversation I think we're going to
Yeah, we'll
back
get
to
that. But, yeah, who knows? I mean, Godfather 2 is better.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
They're just...
It's not going to be better. It's just going to be a comic book.
They're all based on other characters, like revamped versions of characters that were
right.
From
he
before.
Took
it's
Charlton
like,
characters and made Watchmen out of it.
Hey, it doesn't have to be Watchmen, and that thing gets elevated so much, and rightfully so. But
it's the greatest comic book ever.
It is the greatest comic book
created.
Ever, and that's ever. Fine. It, absolutely.
I don't know. I read some Bob Haney.
I will fight anyone that disagrees with me.
I'm in Sal's camp. I think it is the greatest comic book ever written. But
there's some good
Haney
Aquaman
knife fight, Tom. Not just a regular fight either. Knife
a
fight.
Knife fight.
I personally think it's going to be cool if someone does a Rorschach story that with.
Well,
we
talked about that one time. It's like, hey, who knows? It could be kind of interesting. It could be. I mean,
do you want to see a story about?
Is
about
it sacrilegious?
Do you want to see someone cool, a writer and artist that
hey,
has some
it's
chops?
Comics.
That
can't, we have, can't we just have fun?
Hey, do you want to
with see, comics?
Do you want to see
stories?
Comedian and Dr. Manhattan
yes,
in a Vietnam?
I do. Now I do. Now yeah. I do.
You know, in Vietnam. I mean,
we got we have like Cell backed in a corner.
Do you want to read him?
Do you want it?
Tell
do
me.
You want it?
Tell me.
You just
Mao
right now.
Diddy Mao. Yeah.
It's like playing Rush. Do you want to? Do you want to read about Rorschach? Right?
Yes.
Don't you?
Yes.
Don't you? I
guess. Absolutely.
I don't know.
Yes.
Order it now. Okay. Order yeah. now.
No, I agree with you.
You
I mean,
order.
You know, I'm sure there will be plenty of fodder in them for people that want to hate them and. But who knows? They might actually be kind of interesting or fun or something. I don't know. What difference does it make? Like I said, it's really not that big a deal.
I'll bet you at least one of the four is really good, if that's indeed what they're doing.
Have you also heard, like I've heard about Darwin Cook's involvement?
Yeah.
As kind of maybe someone who's...
He's been mentioned. He's been...
In charge of the whole deal kind of thing. That's
in charge of?
That seems weird.
That's... It's cool, but it's kind of a
I did read
like
something about
kind
yeah,
of
show
thing.
Runner.
I think I read something about that,
which seems odd.
Because Darwin,
as much as I love Darwin Cook, but
well, he kind of
he
went
certainly
on
handles nostalgia well.
The prequel might not necessarily be
in the same
tone,
right?
You know,
well, I wouldn't think so. I mean, depending on when they're
so maybe they'll go for like a retro, like 70s or 60s sort of.
Well, that's kind of cool because he does handle like 50s, 60s era. Incredibly well.
I'd like to see a bunch. I'd like to see people write them, much like I really enjoyed the new version of OMAC. The new DC, awesome. And they're they do the Kirby, like love letter to Kirby. I'd almost like to see people, like some of the best writers in comics today, try and mimic, like Alan Moore's Watchmen. You know, almost like try and mimic his voice from that.
Try and do
it. In a send-up sort of way.
As
an homage. Yeah, as an homage. I think that could almost be kind of funny. Or not funny, but kind of...
Fun.
Yeah, fun. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I don't know.
It could be funny, too.
Could be funny. Yeah.
Hopefully not unintentionally
Alan
funny.
Alan Moore is writing one of them, right?
I don't think so.
Like Van Lente, like Van Lente could probably do a really funny take on a Watchmen voice. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like
he
could do.
We're just gonna get. We're just gonna get trench coat Wolverine. Is
that
what
would
Rorschach's
be awesome
gonna be the? You know, like people would be like, "Oh yeah, like Rorschach really speaks to this age. We should really keep him around." And they'd be like, "No, he's not. you're not necessarily supposed to like them all that much.
You know, if DC was smart, they would just hire Terry Moore and Stuart Moore to do every single book and just put Moore on it.
Yeah.
And just
from
the accidental sales enough, you know, alone, they would do all they right.
Yeah. I saw B. Clay tweet something like that. He's like, you know, I'll write it, and they just put Moore on it. And then I'll retire on the royalty.
Don't listen to a word I say. The screams are sound the same. Though the truth may vary, this ship will carry our bodies safe to shore.
You want to talk about?
All right, so we may circle back to Watchmen 2 at some point, but Sal and Tom started this discussion last month about another one of our
another elder statesman of comics who may have lost his mind.
I don't know if you said this on the show. We'll get to that. I don't know.
I didn't say it on the show, but go ahead.
Afterwards, we were talking about whether or not you would like it, and you said that you would force yourself to like it.
I had read so many bad reviews of, and we're talking about Holy Terror, Frank Miller. I had read so many bad reviews of it, and even people that hadn't read it yet hated it so much that I said I kind of want to force myself to like it just to be contrarian.
And then when you said, "Oh," I don't like, I was like, "Whoa!"
Yeah,
that got me to read it because I was just like, "Holy shit!" Like,
I got to read this
like,
now.
Even if Sal was like, "Oh, it's not good. This is not good." And reading it is rather, I think, a rather liberal use of the term read.
Yes.
Because there's not a whole lot there.
There's not much. It's a bunch of splash pages. It's not a whole lot. I mean, I literally got 3/4 of the way through it, and I'm like, what? I don't even know what's supposed to. There's nothing. There's nothing there.
It's like a 12-year-old's revenge fantasy.
Yeah,
like,
There's not even enough there to get upset, like to be offended by.
It's just so empty. I know there's a lot of controversy because of the topic. It's sort of like, oh, Frank Miller is doing a story about like Batman beating up like Muslim terrorists, you know. But it's so slight and so lacking any like emotionality to it that it's hard to even think of it as controversial.
Here's the one thing I want to say about it. Giving Frank credit for this would be, I think, too much. I think if it's trying to say that it was intentional on his part would maybe be giving him too much credit. But it is, if you read it, it is a wonderful example of a sort of baseline reaction to 9/11.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, if you wanted to say that was how. Though I do agree with you, that is giving it.
I'm not saying it was intentional. I'm not saying that he intentionally.
He's a New Yorker.
But if you look at it in that perspective, of like, okay, not everyone is necessarily well read or well educated or up on the sort of sociological and historical implications of 9/11. A lot of people in this country, when that happened, when you know those towers came tumbling down, and
I was angry.
Angry, absolutely. Anger was the first reaction, and you know, I think you know us probably sitting at this table, we're smart enough to know that maybe that wasn't the only reaction.
I would say though, I know where you're going with it, but the book is so slight that even that interpretation is almost like hard to.
I don't know, man. Go out in like go outside of major cities.
I just mean like I understand like the anger portion of it, but I just mean like the mechanics of putting the story together.
It's really lazy.
It's hard to generate piles
of money and fame and. You know, like, oh, how hard am I really going to work on this comic book?
To me that makes it harder to like really buy that because it just seems so.
How did it look?
Slight, just sort of like thrown together, sort of.
Well, I did. That was the one thing I was going to say is that I read a review about it that, you know, just completely dismissed any art in it.
Yeah.
Which I think is wrong because, you know, Frank, I think, is still has tons of chops. Like, he can still lay down incredible images.
There's things in there that look kind of cool. The problem was it didn't...
It wasn't cohesive. It didn't tell a story. There wasn't storytelling, but as far as his ability, his artistic... It's still there. You can see it. And I thought he did some kind of cool things, actually, in it. But it was just a bunch of, like, widespread, you know, splash pages.
Bunch of splash pages.
Yeah, I mean, that's really...
It was kind of like, oh.
There wasn't a whole lot of storytelling, unfortunately, but it was like if you took Sin City and sort of, like, took that Yellow Bastard and spread it out over, you know, 100 more pages. That's kind of, you know, the feel of it. It was just really... Which... You know, like Sin City's not even, it's not like real dense. It's, you know, it's pretty.
No, it's,
but
it's
spread that out even more. You know what I mean?
Like, blow it out so much. I don't even know.
Yeah.
Is this even like a story?
Is it a story?
Like, I don't understand what this is. You know?
Just meandering.
And, when it's put forward as a story, you know, and then you get it.
Right.
You're like, well, this is.
You're expecting a story when you.
Yeah, it's not, though. It's like.
It's not.
So it's one of those you maybe pick up at a convention in a couple of years whenever it's in the $5 bin.
Flip through it.
You know what? It's I don't know. Like I said, the only
it's not even worth $5.
No. Well, here's the thing: the book as a whole, just as a side note, had the cheapest feeling paper that has ever been printed on, and it smelled terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know if you noticed this.
No,
but
you're right.
The pages smelled terrible. The printing, I don't know. It's the cheapest produced hardcover you could ever buy.
I kind of wish that Frank would have taken it seriously, or that he would have been able to do it with Batman and actually put in like hard work
and
late
make
nights
it substantive,
and,
you know,
and
it had,
yeah,
to it.
Because it's like I think he. I don't have a problem with someone stating their opinion, even if I don't agree with it. Especially an artist, someone coming out and going, you know what, fuck you. This is how I feel. I don't care if you like it or not. This is how I feel, and I'm fine with that. Especially about something like 9/11. If someone's just angry and they don't necessarily understand that that's not the only reaction to 9/11. I don't care. That's fine. Put that out there as
an
artist.
It doesn't even seem fully formed in that
but,
sense.
But,
that,
yeah, you know? It doesn't even – that's the problem. It's not even – there's just not enough effort into it is really the problem with it.
Well, here's something worth discussing that I think is interesting is when artists change their styles as they go on in their career, obviously people – disapprove and approve.
Right.
And I feel like as Frank has gone on, people have disapproved more and more and more. But I wonder if it's the case of him not caring and throwing things out there, or if it's him thinking, this is where my art needs to go, and this is how I make my statement, is these loose, open splash pages that I don't spend much time on. And, you know, I really do wonder what his mindset is versus... You know, I feel like a lot of people think that he's just being lazy and sloppy, and he's not doing, you know, detailed pencils.
That's
and
a, that's an interesting point.
Versus here's where my art is, and here's where it's going. Because I feel like most artists, you know, I'm not Frank Miller's age. I haven't been doing it for all these years, but I think most artists feel like they're moving forward,
sure,
and changing and. And I feel like people criticize him a lot because he used to be able to pencil tighter, and I just wonder, like, how intentional is it, or how much is it he doesn't care, or how much is it he thinks this is.
I think he might be forgiven more. I think people would have a better view of it if, while he's been changing his style, the criticism that some of the stories that go with it have become sort of slighter and slighter at the same time, and since he. When he makes something,
right,
I'm
going to throw out another sort of like on that, like sort of me being an apologetic for Frank. But what if this story, and you and I, you read it too, right?
I did not.
Oh, you didn't read it. Okay. Have you seen it at all? Have you looked
through
it?
Oh, I flipped through it. Okay. It was just so cheap, I didn't want to pay for it.
Well,
I didn't buy it.
I mean, if you look at Frank's previous work. You look like Dark Knight and his view of sort of media and how people consume media.
Yeah.
I know you know where I'm going, right? Like, is the layout of Holy Terror, Is the way he told the story, is that a response to how he feels people
consume media now?
Yeah. I'm not trying to say that is necessarily the case, but going off of is what he is doing, let's make the leap.
leap of faith
for a moment and say it's not laziness. It's not him trying to cash in on something or not him just throwing it. What if it's all intentional? What if he's sitting down in his studio and intentionally putting out that book?
Well, I think part of it then becomes a problem of...
Is that worse? Does that make it worse?
Well, no, yeah, not worse. It just... Mm. What it comes down to, though, no matter what his intention is, like if he's like, this is how people consume media now, this is how people look at the world, this is an emotional reaction, the book that I looked through and read... it didn't register as being intentional. It didn't register, and it hasn't registered that way for a lot of people.
Right.
So whether he intended to or not, at some point you have to be able to communicate the things that you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. If that's what you're trying to do, he has done a very poor job of communicating that, because he still puts his things out and aims it at a crowd that consumes things in a certain way. And if you are going to change your style then and be that sort of radical, almost like anti-style, and you're selling it ostensibly to a comic book crowd or whatever, the people that have been your fans before, it doesn't mean you don't have to do it, but you also have, if you want to be successful at it, you have to communicate it better than I think he has. Because I think...
No, that makes
sense.
You
get it. Yeah. And even if he's intending to do that,
It didn't work. It just didn't
come across that way.
At the end of the day, it has to communicate that in some way.
It has
way.
To it's, sort of work yeah. somehow. And part of it, too, is like, aside from his art, you know, and just like things he said over the years since 9/11, I think 9/11, like, broke him.
Yeah.
Somehow. You know what I mean? Like,
he's probably not alone.
I think, like Dennis Miller.
I was just going to say, you can say the same thing about Dennis
Miller.
Like
his whole worldview, whenever you hear him
fractured
talk about
his
something.
Psyche so bad. Is, you know.
His whole
and it's understandable in some ways. I mean, I'm not a
it's
New Yorker.
Strange.
I didn't grow up there. I didn't have, you know what I mean? So,
it's very strange because every time you hear him say something, it's through that sort of prism of that.
Right.
Like, it's everything. You know, whether or not there's the whole thing about his post about Occupy Wall Street, and I don't care if he approves of Occupy Wall Street or whatever, but the way he said it and, like, the words he used sounded like a TV presenter from Dark Knight Returns.
Right.
You know, it was very, like, you know, like...
You sound like the guy who we thought were your villains.
Yeah, and it's very, like, something happened, you know, when people joke around, like, oh, the terrorist won. Like, I don't know. I think, like, Frank Miller's kind of, like, a weird example of, like, someone who's...
Well, I think it's just...
I
think on some level it's just age, too.
Yeah.
The older you get, the less... And this is from my own experience. The less you sort of are willing to tolerate... Not tolerate, but the less you humor things that you don't agree with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like a really, like grumpy,
angry
man.
At something that
seems sort of like, well, you don't have to be that necessarily. You know, like, the words you choose... Are strange.
He sounded like a man who was angry because the world that he wanted is not the world that we're living in.
Well, I was always thinking about, like, artists, you know, like, because one of the things about art is, like, you always hear that, you know, one of the benefits of art is supposed to, like, possibly, it's a very classical idea that art is, like, a window to some version of the truth. Like, the art allows you to see, like, some sort of fundamental truth to it. And we sort of sometimes give artists, like, a status of, like, they have an insight into the world because they're artists.
This goes to a conversation we had about people get angry at someone that they, you know, someone that they look up to, an artist or writer or celebrity
sort of
or someone.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we put like these weird
connections.
We connect to people because all of a sudden they do something we like. And so we assume that they're
all
amazing
people.
You
assume
people.
That Frank Miller has a firm grasp of like international politics.
And,
and then it's very possible
well, that he doesn't.
Know more.
That he never has. Yeah. That he never, ever has.
But you look at
you might
how,
know more.
But I assume, but it's so arrogant. It's like,
how
I,
much?
Well,
how,
I like his work, so he must think like I think. He because he's awesome,
it
and
works.
I'm awesome, yeah. So he must think like I think.
It works in reverse. How much did Dark Knight, at a very formative age, kind of form your opinion of government and media? And so if he was in...
Wow.
Well, no.
I don't know.
No.
I was a little older than you, so
well,
I don't know.
No, but you read that, and you got it, and it struck a chord. It's like, yeah, that's exactly how it is. And it struck it strikes this chord with you. You don't think that, I mean, that for a lot of people, I know for
no,
me...
No, and this, I mean, this may surprise you, but I'm probably a bit... Like, I'm a bit more of a blind patriot in some ways.
Okay.
Like,
oh, that does surprise me.
Yeah, not to government necessarily, mm-hmm. but to the ideal. Does that make sense? So some of the stuff in Dark Knight,
mm-hmm.
I didn't like. It didn't strike a chord. You know what I mean? Like the Superman character and him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, isn't that weird? Now, like, if
looking
Frank
back
Miller,
now, yeah,
like Frank Miller would have Superman like incinerate all the Muslims. Yeah. You know, like Superman would swoop in and say, "It's like it's just very." But yeah, I mean, that's why I was.
Who was
thinking
the hero
about,
in that book?
I was thinking.
Now
about,
you look at it like who was like was how was he looking at the
I
world
just,
then?
I just love the idea of it. When you said all that Occupy Wall Street stuff, people were like, Frank Miller doesn't understand anything about economic. Like, well, why did we ever think Frank Miller?
Well, because we loved his work, so yeah, we assumed yeah. he knew more than we did. We assumed that he, you know, like was a reasonable, intelligent, you know, liberal person because he has to be because I am.
Yeah.
And I like his
yeah.
work.
Well,
yeah.
I think he has to be like me.
I
think that's where I was going is that, you know. For me, and you're only a couple years older than I am, but Dark Knight was a formative work for me. It was something that I read at a very impressionable time in my life, and yeah, it was formative. It made an impact on me, and if I'm the person I am now, in some very small part because of that work,
oh no,
it
Frank,
shatters
no.
you. Now well, all of a sudden, there's a schism.
Uh-oh. It's like
now all of a sudden,
he hates women all of a sudden. How,
yeah, how can Frank Miller say these things that are so contrary to my beliefs if at
sleeper
a sleeper
Frank
if,
Miller
yeah.
cell
if at a fundamental
scum and rapist
the whole point of this podcast all these years is just building up the spread Frank
well no but
all
but,
these Watchmen
but I think,
2 fans
I think
these
that's,
scum and rapists
I think that's where you get that sort of the super hatred mm-hmm. that people all of a sudden they
how dare
turn
you,
on
how
people.
Dare you yeah. betray me like that?
Yeah,
Frank.
Because
yeah.
well, not only that, but there's like this weird conflict inside of yourself of going, wait a minute, he no longer agrees with what I agree with. So what does that mean?
What does that say about
you know,
my?
Yeah,
beliefs?
What does that say about me? What does that say? You know,
should
it's
I
like,
say, oh, he might be crazy because he wears that hat.
Yeah. I have this strange old con experience that I remember decently about, you know, maybe a little over 10 years ago, talking to Bob Schreck at a comic show, trying to get him to hire me, and doing small talk and then talking about Frank Miller and him talking to me about how Frank Miller called him after on 9/11 and they sat on the phone and they cried together. And he told this entire story of Frank Miller just kind of breaking down about 9/11. And I do agree with you. It probably changed who he was from that experience. Being I guess he's a New Yorker. I assume he's
yeah,
a
he's
man.
A New Yorker.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, I but then again, I think it's really interesting. The more that I meet people who I idolize and I learn that they're a different person than their art leads me to believe all these years of reading them and looking at their stuff and they're just not the person that I wish they were. That's kind of interesting. You have to separate the fanboy a little bit as you start to actually become an adult.
Yes. Yeah.
So you kind of have to be like, you know, I'm probably perfectly capable of having my own opinion about
well, that's
yeah.
yeah, that's
it,
what
it,
you
it
know.
Sort of becomes like a
listen,
thing of like
some the, a couple of my favorite writers are also, well, were also alcoholics who ended up killing themselves.
Yeah.
I have a big, like, I have a hard time sort of
getting past that.
Getting past those two things. Like, I love their work, but the fact that they drank themselves to death really puts a damper on my idol.
I feel like there's a lot of fiction that's been made about fanboys who go up to famous writers or movie makers or whatever, and then they're a total monster. And I feel like the entire show Extras is almost based on the idea that you meet these actors and they're just the worst people in the world.
I have to say, though, I mean, in the years that we've been doing the podcast and we've met so many people that, you know, I personally grew up idolizing or, you know,
Been disappointed.
I've really never had. I mean, I've had
Myself and how I've approached them.
I've had a couple of
them. They are just people.
Well, that's what it comes down to. They're just people. They're just fucking, you know. Well, you know, yeah, it just comes down to they're assholes like everybody else. I mean,
I Farley'd big time on Bruce Timm, and I'll never, ever.
Talk to Brian Azzarello. Like, you still have a problem having a conversation with the guy.
I can't do it. I can't. It's,
why?
I don't know. I can't get past
it. Do you think he'll be like,
nerd,
we've talked for 10 minutes, and I want you to take all the work of mine that you own and just sell it. I don't want you to have any of it. I don't want you to buy anymore.
I love the man's work so much, and
he doesn't like you at all.
Isn't he a Cubs fan?
And he hates.
He's a Cubs fan.
That's a big problem.
That's the thing, we constantly argue about sports, and he's not the warmest individual right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And
really,
And he loves Sal. He fucking loves Sal. He's going to ask Sal to go on vacation with him one of these days. But me,
well,
I'm just like,
we'll,
you know,
we'll
just,
get him
just
over, and I'll watch how he interacts with both of you.
I'll just stay back.
I'll just be cool.
An outside party. Yeah. That's good. I like that.
And just Chris will just be sweating and just like. I think it would be better to talk about sports because it's a completely
that's all I want
neutral
to talk about.
Yeah, but Tom, I'm an annoying Cardinals fan. You know
you are.
Yeah,
this is true.
It's true. Hide it. Look, if I
no,
if
I can't, no, I can't.
No, you can't because he'll be wearing a Cardinals jersey.
Yeah. I can pretend. He's wearing a University of Chicago sweatshirt.
Oh, Jesus! Whoa, he's wearing a sweater. Oh no, that's just him.
He just took off his hoodie, his hat, his glasses, his headphones.
He's a mess.
To unveil a Cardinals Rangers Fall Classic t-shirt.
Don't make me show you my underwear.
Ooh, oh, please. No.
Right after the World Series, I bought a shirt that says "Got Rings?"
Well, this is David Freeze's underwear.
You don't have any rings. No, you don't. You didn't get a World Series.
No,
then,
I did not.
Did
you?
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
Until he kills someone for you.
Before the show, you were talking about the Tigers, and every sentence started with "we." Yes. I don't believe you work for the Tigers organization.
Oh, I'm pretty sure I do. I don't know. You don't know what I do in my spare time.
One thing
you should know is comics are not time consuming, so I have plenty of time for other jobs.
Listen, obsession.
Holy Terror, four thumbs up.
Yes, absolutely. Buy it. It's a groundbreaking.
Both of my thumbs are sideways. Let's figure that out. Calling occupants of interplanetary craft. Calling occupants of interplanetary most extraordinary craft. Calling occupants of interplanetary craft.
Chris
good.
Gets me.
That was good because he was talking about strip clubs. That's funny.
All right. Canadian strip club.
Mark Miller. I have to talk about him. The Big Bang Theory. I need to still talk about that. And I actually read some comics, too, so we can talk about that.
Tom and I need to talk about Commander.
Let's talk about Mark Miller, though.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's talk shit about him.
Let's talk shit about Mark Miller.
We're talking shit
like
about
he's not
Mark Miller.
Pay attention.
No, he's... Whatever, that dude's got bags of money.
He reads this. He listens to this podcast
good.
All the time.
Listening to old episodes.
Yeah.
What did Mark Miller do now?
Are we recording?
Yeah, we're recording.
Oh.
Yeah. Thank goodness I didn't.
Okay, so Mark Miller came out and said some really stupid shit about No, but I understand. I mean, he was talking about digital comics, and I guess I could read it for you.
No.
He said...
Clear.
No, I'm not going to do an accent. I think digital... he was talking about digital comics and day-and-date digital comics, and he said, I think digital could be a useful tool, but I'm increasingly concerned for friends in retail that they're going to get shafted here. I really think day-and-date release is a disastrous idea. It makes no economic sense at all to comics as a business. It's potentially ruinous for comic stores, and in the long term, it's not going to do publishers any favors either. I see the attraction on a very superficial level. And this was in response to releasing Kick-Ass 2.
All comics are superficial.
Superior. Like, yeah. You know, like. He's not releasing any of his books, Superior.
Period. They're not coming out.
Yeah, period.
they don't come out.
He's not doing them digitally. Yeah. Okay, I get that he's trying to support...
Automobiles were terrible for the horse and carriage industry.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, to quote a line from some movie that I can't remember, but you want to buy
Logan
Tower Records?
No,
it was the Facebook movie.
Social Network.
Social Network.
Yeah.
Want to buy a Tower Records. I mean... I don't know how more clearly we can look at other industries and say this is the way that things are going. This is the way that entertainment especially is going with digital release the day that it's done.
I don't buy DVDs.
Right.
Like, I just don't. At this point in my life, the other day I was like, my wife and I wanted to watch West Side Story. And I just got it off Amazon, as usual, as happens. And I was just like, the thought of myself ever buying another DVD or, like, Blu-ray or anything is so strange to me.
You've passed that by.
Yeah,
it's gone. Well, later on he talks about, I think he thinks that comics should be more like the movie industry where you have releases in the theaters and then later they come out on DVD. And it's like, but the movie industry, theaters are dying.
Yeah.
You know, is that so, you're trying to support, to support comic shops by referencing an industry that, Chris, put that away. Don't make me slap you.
It's too late. It's too late. Well,
it's already gone.
He's
it's
late.
Done.
As usual, he's late. He's late. And it's already day and day. What is he? Whatever. Stay in your lane. You write, sometimes people, again, we're going to go back to the thing where, everyone expected Frank Miller to be an expert on, international politics.
Yeah.
And,
right.
Mark Miller might
write
not
comics.
Know the
his,
exact
his,
economics
his job
of
is
everything.
To write comics, not publish comics.
Yeah, and fuck him. He's not even American.
Yeah.
He's not even American.
He's Scottish.
He doesn't even know how to pronounce his own last name.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Can I
Yes.
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 You
okay.
can.
Yes.
Thank
yes.
you. Thank you. I'm glad I can.
You can do anything
I'm
you
glad
want.
I can. Okay. So here's a little bit of my
Didn't your parents tell you that, Ryan? You can do whatever it is you want to do.
Here's a little bit of my history. I'm a huge music fan. I worked at a music store. Then I worked at a comic book store.
Wow.
And now I work in comics.
Independently.
Are you going to work in a newspaper next?
So, yeah. So, basically, I come from a person
Are you
that
studying
would never
Sanskrit
buy... I come from a place where I would never buy anything digitally. And then over the years of things being exclusive to digital... I have caved, and I now buy things digitally.
Sure.
And as a person that worked at a comic store, I'm all about print. And I still am all about print. But as things became way too expensive for me to put into print, I now do a webcomic begrudgingly. I do a webcomic that...
We used to put this podcast out on vinyl.
Why begrudgingly? Yeah. Why is it you want to hold on to something that was dead before you even...
A lot of it is because of the way webcomics are done. I don't like reading a story a page a week or even 3 pages a week. I want to have a completed story in my hand or at least 22 to 24 pages in my hand to read through. And that's a big deal with webcomics.
Okay, but you can buy a digital comic...
You can buy a digital
comic. 22 pages of comic, just like you can.
You can buy an original graphic novel.
Why do people still buy magazines? Because people still do. There's a resurgence in magazines. There is. And I think no. that people like having something that they hold in their hands, and I personally do too.
Well, there's a certain tactile, but you know.
I don't think that anybody at this point should really get that insulted by someone who is totally anti-digital, because it is a transition period. And if Mark Millar, wants to speak out against it, and like I heard a lot of people have been outraged and like complaining about this statement. I don't think it's that controversial of a statement, because I think
we're
in a transitional period, and I think personally, all of my stuff, I always, the end goal is to see it in print, in a book, on someone's shelf. And that is a much more satisfying as a creator than someone to read it on an iPad. And, you know, I've done digital comics. I did a book, you know, for Double Feature, and it was on the iPad exclusively. And I got, honestly, very little satisfaction for when it came out. That there was something that you could download for 99 cents.
But I think part of it, though, too, is what the idea of what disposable means. Like,
yeah.
The idea that the 22-page comic that you would buy and then not keep for more than 3 months, that used to be just a disposable
sure.
media that you would have. And if you really liked it, someday you could buy.
Well,
I bought a big star.
That's why comics were worth something.
But here's
because
the
people they were.
Yeah, but I mean, it's what instead what's going to end up happening is I still buy. I bought a record. I bought records 2 weeks ago because I just wanted to have the records. But
sure.
I also buy stuff digitally. But the stuff, mm-hmm. if I buy a book now, I buy a book that I really like. You know, I no longer play the game of necessarily buying a ton of 22-page comics that mm-hmm. I kind of like,
well,
and
the,
kind
we,
of the, in, because
both in music and in print, they're trying to accommodate you and saying
yeah.
here are special editions, and DVDs do that too. Here are special editions.
Yeah.
Here are bonus
I'm just saying,
features.
Just disposability is different
that look
now.
Really nice, and they're trying to make you continue to buy the print.
Yeah,
medium.
I mean, there are books I buy because I like to have the paper version, but my idea of disposability is different.
Sure.
Like
right.
the 22-page
well,
comic
know,
I used to buy that I would not look at ever again. I might as well have thrown it away.
Sure.
From
a creator's standpoint, though, I think what, you know, I mean, I'm a huge fan of yours. I think you're a tremendously talented artist.
Oh, wow.
And writer.
He's looking at
and,
Tom.
And, no, I really am.
Well, thank
but
you.
I think... You know, I think an issue that not just you, but many independent artists have is that you're trying to make a living through your art. You're trying to sell your art to consumers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They don't give a shit how you feel about your art. That's the problem that I think you experience is that you're worried about how you feel when it comes out. But as a consumer, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's a very hard place for you to be
yeah.
as an artist. But as someone that is trying to sell your art because you want to make a living, you want to, you know.
Yeah.
You have to accept at some point that the consumer ultimately is more important, their feelings is more important than yours.
Sure. Well, in the end, it isn't entirely about my feelings. It's a question of, and this has been my goal for years, is to make enough money doing what I'm doing to continue to do it.
Right.
And that is the big issue.
Where's the tipping point? I think
right.
it's, you know what
well,
I mean?
Well,
like, where's that?
Like, it's a strange thing. Like, I've done God Hates Astronauts as a webcomic. I've made no money off of it. I lose money on publishing it, and then I half recoup it by selling print copies that I print myself. It doesn't fuel my life, but it has led to me getting a paycheck doing other work.
Right.
But, you know, like honestly, like, if I had my way, everyone who reads God Hates Astronauts would be paying for it. because I spend so much time on it. And then it's a strange culture of giving away comics for free, because then people expect it always for free. And, it's really, really strange. Like,
well, no, I think what it is, it's a balance.
Sure.
The more that you want it to be what you want it to be, the less you can charge for it. When you have the ideals of,
a little bit.
You know what I mean? Like it's a shame, because in this country, certainly in the culture that we're in, art isn't necessarily appreciated as much as it should be.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so it comes down to, well, I want what I want. I'm paying for it, so I expect what I'm going to get from it. You as an artist are trying to do something completely different. You know what I mean? It has nothing to do with supplying the consumer with something they want. It has to do with you expressing yourself. It has to do with you producing
your thing.
Right.
I'm not following
so it's
the trend and trying to.
But it's a balancing act. At the same time, how many consumers are out there are interested in what you're doing?
Right.
You know,
well, it is a thing in comics too. I think comics is especially is filled with a lack of appreciation for the cost of things. Like, there's a a culture of like discounts and can I get this web comic for free? And
you're selling art.
Yeah.
That's the problem, because especially now, I mean, we live in an Amazon world.
It's
where
a consumable.
It's the lowest. Yeah. At the end of the day, the guy picking it up off the shelf or buying it digitally through iTunes or whatever else, they may not even have any appreciation for the work that goes into it. They don't care.
Well, comics
they don't.
Just
you know,
all weird anyway.
Well,
it's like a weird realm of backwards logic, and
we talked about Mr. Murder is Dead, and I wrote an article about it. That book, the production quality on it, amazing, beautiful, beautiful art, great printing
by
Brent Schoonover. It's Archaea. It's my favorite graphic novel of the year. It's in 1999, and that price is so low for the production quality,
but it only fits into. It's like
for $10 more, you could have had Holy Terror.
Exactly. Yes, that's a yes. You just
well,
you,
I just
you
think
just nailed
it's a thing
it.
Of what it is. It's all different ways of owning something. Mm-hmm. And what happens is there used to be a way that the only way you read all this stuff was in this one medium, which was paper. And this was the only way you read it all. And now there's multiple ways.
Which
there's
is cool.
multiple ways
which is
to
awesome.
Consume it.
Which
there's
is awesome.
Multiple ways. There's going to be people that want to buy the like. There's people that want to buy vinyl because there's some sort of. It's not as big as it once was, but there are. They
people
still
that
make
like
it
vinyl.
Because there is a culture of people that find a value within it. And.
Well, you know,
it's not the future.
I think it
exists. It's
sure,
a thing
sure.
that it happens,
think,
and I think it just changes. It's just changing because it was very stuck in a rut.
The heart of what Miller was saying.
Miller.
Is that he doesn't want local comics.
Please sell my comics in your comic shop. I want to be your friend because
comic shops are like record stores.
Good ones
stick around.
He doesn't want the local comic shop to go away because he is very, very, you know, unabashedly a fanboy.
I think the store is an event.
And it's and buying something online is not an event. Yeah. It's just like
we're not recording this in my kitchen. All right, we're recording this in a local comic
around
shop.
A comics is an event.
Yeah, see what I'm saying?
Every week,
I look forward to going to the comic store.
Mm-hmm.
It's an event in my life to get comics, but I don't only buy comics. I talk to the people who run the store and the other people who are in the store at the time.
I have
That's
an idea.
Part of the experience.
That's a good story,
and it's fun.
And I forgot this when I originally read about Mark Miller. and his comments on it, I was thinking about another industry, video games.
Mm-hmm.
Video game industry has just grown incredibly. It's gotten to the point where
it's changing big time.
Yeah, but it's to the point now where it's overtaking film as the biggest money generator
mm-hmm.
in entertainment.
Yeah.
The game Call of Duty
Modern Warfare 3.
Game that wants you to think it's the greatest game ever made.
Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether it's the greatest game or you think it is or not. The point of it is that it's generated more money than any film in 5 days than any film in the history.
Is it really?
Yes. $500 million.
Holy
$500 million in 5 days.
Wow.
$500 million.
Wow. That's like insane. Dark Knight
crazy.
Numbers.
No, it blows.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
insane. White total.
Insane. But if you look at the game industry and the amount of revenue that video games make, it's crazy. And so to look at comics and go, well, we should be more like film. No, we should be more like video games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Video games put out one product for $60 every couple of years, and they sell millions and millions and millions and millions of copies over 2 or 3 year period. So how can we be more like that in the comic book industry? How do we create something that people want and that is more, you know, for $60, if I buy it the day it comes out, it's $60 for a brand new game, and I'll play the damn thing for the next year or 2 years, depending on the game. A comic book is $3, and I'll read it in 20 minutes and never look at it again. So how do we change that? How do we change the value of a comic book?
Well, and it's what they've done in Europe is with the graphic albums.
Yeah.
To some degree, absolutely,
You get a bigger chunk. Get a more
bigger chunk, something that's more valuable.
It comes
something
out.
Something that lasts longer. Yeah. And it doesn't come out as fucking
often.
Often, so it's more valuable.
Well, okay. So let me speak from a creator who's doing creator-owned things. A lot of it comes down to companies expecting you to anticipate a lot of making money off the back end kind of thing. And so there's a lot of investment of your time that needs to come into producing 5 or 6 issues of a series, hoping that it will sell well and hoping that it will have a back end. And that there really isn't that much money to be made off of it in general. So it's kind of a thing where they expect an artist or writer to spend this amount of time, and you know, as an artist,
and then cross your fingers,
right? And then cross your fingers, you have to spend money that you have saved up, and you have to develop the entire thing. And then, even when things are not released as a single graphic novel, they need to, and are released monthly, you still need to build up quite a bit ahead of time to make sure that you're releasing on schedule, and so. A lot of it comes down to you have to live off basically no money for a while and gamble that you're going to make your money back.
Right.
And that's not at all what video games...
Well, hey, your other option is go get a job.
Well, sure.
9 to 5.
Yeah, or go work for video games or for movies.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, and that's the thing. It's like you can't... you're gambling on having a life where you get to do what you love to do as a career. You know what I mean? That's the thing that I think a lot of if you talk to older creators, that's what they did. I mean, that you spent 10 years making no money, and then you made a name for yourself. And hopefully, if you're lucky, you were able to then be successful. And now it seems like, and not just in the comic book industry, but in every industry, it seems like people just want to be handed that.
Yeah.
And they expect it. And it's like, well, no, it doesn't exist that way. Maybe you don't have the ability to do it. Maybe you don't have the work. Maybe you don't have the talent. That's the gamble. You want to live the rest of your life working in an industry that you love. You want to spend the rest of your life doing something you love to do and get paid well to do it. Guess what? That's a luxury. That's not something you're owed. That's not something anyone, you know what I mean? Like,
well my example is out of college, I had a friend who started working for a very small company called Harmonix in Boston, Massachusetts. And he started working there, and they're producing games for the iToy. Weren't really anything interesting, but he was making a living wage, and he was fine. And then they had an idea for a game called Guitar Hero. And he started working on Guitar Hero from the ground up. And even still, when he was working, I mean, he still works there. He still works at Harmonix. He worked on Guitar Hero 1 and 2. He worked on Rock Band 1 and 2. He still was putting food on the table, even when he was working on a very small, small scale for this company. Mm-hmm. And in comics, when you're working as a creator-owned kind of thing, there is no money. But in video games, there's so much money thrown around. So Modern Warfare 3, people work on that. You know, everybody's getting paid very well. It's working on that.
Right.
On that. There's no.
Well, yeah,
risk.
But they built to
there's
that.
No
yeah.
risk
but
on
they built up
even
that.
On,
it's not.
Even
it's
on Modern
not.
Warfare 1, there's no risk.
Well, yeah, but that company started somewhere. They didn't start out of the gate.
They started a very small.
But that's
company,
what I'm saying.
Sure.
How do we get comics to the point where that's possible? How, you know, going doing the same
bunch of money.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like how do you get it outside of?
They have to generate money, like you know, not like Modern Warfare 3, but they have to generate more money, thus they can. Realistically invest more money in the talent up front.
Absolutely.
So that then they can actually produce something.
And better.
And something like Modern Warfare 3 takes, you know, hundreds of people to work on it, and, you know, they develop it over many, many years, whereas a comic, you know, is like three or four people developing it over, who knows, you know. Yeah,
well, but that's what I'm saying.
For
we need
a novel for a year, maybe. I don't
know. I think we have to look at it and change the way that comics are delivered. That they're developed the way that we, you know what I mean? Like, that's my whole point.
But I think it's
like,
very funny, especially in light of we discussed putting more money into comics, to think of all the stuff with how Disney's been kind of making Marvel cut costs, which is funny, because you would think of if anyone had the resources to kind of be like, well, you know, if we put more money into it, we can kind of invest in these things and maybe make... Because it almost comes down to a point where there's got to be one... Someone with money has to come forward at some point and take a gamble with their money and be like, we'll pay you to do this very different thing, and everyone sort of takes a gamble on how it goes, because there needs to be some original like outlay of cash to it. But it seems like, for whatever reason, comics as a business, the model is so...
Well, that's what I mean, but,
so
we, but you have, like, prominent, you know, writers sitting there going,
so,
well, we should just keep doing what we're doing and not change things any, and we should, you know, look at industries
ingrained.
That are dying instead of looking at industries that are growing.
Comics are a funny business. They are. It is a weird. It's like everything with comics is this weird, like, system that if I explain to my wife, I tried to explain to my wife once the direct market.
Why?
And she was just
like, it's like explaining the infield fly rule.
Yeah. You're bored.
I was explaining to her about some book was getting canceled or something, and I was like, well, you know, you have to order it ahead of time. And she's like, so you have to order it ahead of time without like ever seeing it. Well, I'm like, yeah, you order it. You have to order it ahead of time before you've ever
seen
it.
That's fucking crazy.
And sometimes it comes out late. And sometimes it doesn't finish, but you order ahead because you want to see it. And if you don't order ahead, then a trade won't come out that you can buy. But you already own the issues. And it's like, and she's just like, what? She's like, what is this? Like,
what?
like, that's how
it's
you
like fucking this. Translate that to TV for a second.
Well, no, I mean, it's just all very strange. Like, sell out. Like, then I was trying to explain to her, like, oh, you know, you get all these press releases, so and so sold out. It just means, like, everyone picked up their copies that they pre-ordered.
Everything,
you know, like,
everything
yeah.
ships.
Yeah. And it's like, why? Because they don't make more than what people ask for ahead of time. You know, it's just
fucking
like,
vaudeville work better than this.
When you sit with someone who doesn't know any of it, and you try and explain like the economics of it to them, like, really? That's how it works.
I appreciate it because I didn't know how any of it worked. And you just told me.
Yeah. But when you try and explain it to someone, and they're just like, really? That's how that works? I'm just like, yeah. Why?
Yeah.
That's how it works. Nobody knows. Nobody likes it, but we all like continue to do it.
Hey!
goes on in Gotham when I'm going. Time to get rid of these rap criminals. All right. Well,
just for the record, Mark Millar is short and a ginger. In case we didn't piss him off enough, or I didn't piss him off.
I think you did a pretty good job.
I guess you're never working with him ever.
Oh, well.
When I think about the drug market, I just look at... I think of the face on the cover of this Commandy book. his
eyes are like 4 inches
just
apart.
Like a very intense Commandy stare
I guess speaking about post-apocalyptic.
The direct market issue of Commandy is amazing.
The direct market is like the Living Dead. It's the zombies of the apocalypse that will not die.
Is it Commandy issue number 9 where he goes to the diamond warehouse?
Don't spoil too much. Don't spoil too much for me. I just purchased the Commandy
omnibus.
Here's
the thing about Commandy.
Yeah, and he takes 30%.
I own a bunch of like individual Commandy issues that are spread out, but I bought the omnibus because I love Commandy. I think
I've never read Commandy.
Commandy's
ever.
Awesome.
Ever.
And
that's awesome.
The thing that impresses me the most is oftentimes you will hear the criticism of Kirby's work at DC is they're like, oh, Kirby wasn't good at dialogue, and I think that is interpreted to mean like he was not a good writer,
right?
Because we have a very close association with dialogue and writing, as if those are always two interchangeable things that are always going to be linked together.
Are you saying they're not?
I'm
waiting.
There's something that Kirby... though the dialogue isn't good, the thing that Kirby does writing-wise, like storytelling-wise, like story-generating-wise, that's great in Commandy is that there is very... characters that you think are really evil or really bad turn out not to be bad.
Oh, you're spoiling it for me.
Turn out to be multifaceted using not sophisticated.
It's not black and white?
Yeah, it's not black and white.
There are shades of gray.
There are shades of gray.
I like that.
There's flat color on...
there's flat color on it, but not on the characters. And because I think in modern times, modern comics were very into dialogue. Like, there's a lot of discussion of, like, how does the dialogue sound? And then that is important when you do a certain
type of comic. Is it realistic?
Yeah.
Is that how the characters should...
You can have characters talk realistically that aren't talking about anything, and then that's not really...
Hawkeye would never say that.
I know, yeah. But
he'd never say it
that
way.
A guy in a purple suit with a bow and arrow would never, ever say that.
Would never, ever say that. But
I like the accent. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
But the part that impresses me is that, yes, Kirby is not
perfect.
Not writing a bit of dialogue or any captions in any way would flow naturally
this
from anyone's mouth.
This is not Shakespeare.
And it creates, but it does create its own atmosphere, and the characters do have...
Well, I think you could
complex.
Say that about his art, too.
Yeah, it's
his
very
art
complex.
Wasn't natural. It wasn't, you know, it was...
He would have a punch coming towards the camera, and it would look like a sofa cushion.
It's awesome. It's very, it creates its own atmosphere within it. And, he manages to get all sorts of depth into these very simple characters... And not necessarily doing it through long soliloquies where someone's giving a very long explanation.
Now I'm really excited to read this.
There's tons of action because that's what he does, but he still fits in 1,000 crazy ideas. One issue a war is solved by pulling a slot machine arm. Just this crazy idea that is put in there for two pages.
We're not gonna dwell on it. I'm just gonna throw it in there.
I don't know. When the next time I hear someone be like, oh, you know, well, Kirby wasn't, you know, a great writer, I'd be like, well,
he has great ideas, but he's not a great writer.
Not a great scripter.
Sure, I don't know.
I would say Commandy is better than... I would say...
I haven't read it, so I don't...
Writing-wise, The New Gods would really be one where at times the things people say can be confusing in comparison. I think Commandy is much more straightforward.
More focused.
More focused.
Yeah.
More... in and of itself, well, its yeah, own yeah, story. I,
was
world.
Commandy after or before?
During and then lasted during, longer than yeah. It's
well, maybe it's an artist sort of realizing what he can yeah. and can't do, and going with
it. Well, rereading yeah, well, them
the thing is that Commandy was one title. It was Commandy, where the Fourth World stuff was what four.
Yeah, it was
different,
all these different
yeah,
stories.
It was, right, right, it was right. Jimmy Olsen, and it was. The Forever People. It was a lot of different titles. So this is a lot more, and it's one story.
It's just very impressive to read them all in a row. And it's like, oh, it's this huge.
It's an epic story.
The end of the first issue has a map showing where everything, which I always love, is it shows that they thought ahead of everything that's in it, and you see everything that happens in the map as he slowly goes through it.
I love maps,
and it's very simple in one hand, where it's very like straightforward. Action adventure story, like post-apocalyptic with like animals that talk. But on the other hand, characters do complex things, and they're not all what you think they are when you first see them. And it's just really impressive.
Like
to
there's a guy named Ben Boxer.
All right, ooh, is he name. A boxer
who has a cyclotronic heart?
Yeah, and that just is like tossed in. Like there's all this stuff that's just sort of like thrown in and woven around, but the story is really good and it's really focused. And it's like that's.
I
really
used to
good.
Work. I used to work with this guy. That
his name was Ben Boxer.
No. Oh. His name was Todd, but he was a guy that was sort of like a million ideas.
Half tiger, half man.
No.
I know this Todd. Sorry. Don't tie.
No, Todd was a great source of ideas. He had no follow through.
Yeah,
like he could not. You just needed someone to follow him around, pick up the scraps of paper that he would throw on the ground because he just had idea after idea, and follow through
and
on those ideas and focus those ideas. And I used to call him Captain Tangent because it was a conversation with him all over the place. And that's like Kirby is just like this idea machine, yeah. Like
factory.
And yeah, it's just.
But you
like,
know what's funny in reading this? In reading the characters that I said were very complex, I always think about my favorite Kirby Marvel character, which is the Thing. And I always think about how so much of the Thing is like this character that should be very hard to generate emotion from. You would think it would be a hard character necessarily artistically to get a lot of like facial like
expression
or
anything.
But he always still managed to.
He was the heart and soul. He was the guy that you
got it across artistically that he was a complex, or like the way he's framed or what
he's doing.
Like there was always a way to get that emotion across in the story, even if it wasn't necessarily like a completely nuanced, like great facial like sculpture. Yeah.
My favorite Kirby character is
so many.
Mr. Miracle?
Yeah, Mr. Miracle.
Mr. Miracle's awesome.
I fucking love Mr. Miracle.
It's a great idea. It's
great idea, like, great costume. And it's just one of those characters, like, you could, just that alone, like, the creation of that character alone is unbelievable. Like, I'll never create anything that good. And that was just, like,
Scott,
one.
And his,
you know
and,
what I mean? Like,
and,
one
and,
little
and
toss-off
and his
fucking
alias
character.
Is Scott-free. I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, he's fucking awesome. Like, yeah. Mr. Miracle is
great design,
unbelievable.
Great
everything
idea.
About him. Yeah. And it's just like, he's just, like, in the beginning, he's just sort of like.
He's one of these 100 characters
right.
that just made
right.
up to do.
Like, that's the greatness of Kirby. And when I was younger, I never appreciated it as much as I do now. Just, well, like.
We
unbelievable.
We talked about it
On
the Thor animated stuff that came out.
The designs.
Hulk versus Wolverine and Hulk versus Thor, and the Hulk versus Thor was all the Asgardian story. And it's like everything that Kirby did translates
to animation so well.
It's born for animation, and that was a lot of his artwork. It was like this. This captured animation. Everything was just wanting to leap out of the page, and in animation, it's able to do that. It's I have developed such an appreciation for Kirby over the last few years that I didn't have growing up, because I think we, and I'm talking generally about, you know, our age group, kind of grew up in that Frank Miller,
modern
Alan Moore modern era of comics that it kind of passed Kirby up. You know, visually, and it changed.
Well, I highly recommend the Commandy Omnibus as a gift.
Well,
I
think it's
really
a fun.
Good.
I purchased it tonight.
Yeah, I think
are we doing gift recommendations?
Oh, gift recommendation for ourselves? Oh, well, yeah. Don't buy it for me. I already haven't. I don't know when the second one's coming out.
Did you like Planet of the Apes, the original
movie?
Charlton Heston movie?
I'm not a crazy lover of it. I like it. I'm not a huge Planet of the Apes fan.
You just kind of feel that this series was kind of DC's answer. It's like, hey, this post-apocalyptic world thing is getting some traction. Hey,
it's
1972.
When was Planet of the Apes? Like 68?
No. 68, I think.
Was it 68?
I think it was 68 or
69. Yeah, so it's about roughly the same time. It's
new Planet of the Apes. I really liked.
I haven't seen that yet.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I thought that was.
Just look at that. Look at that.
Yeah, that's
pretty. Gorillas fighting.
I honestly
tigers on horses with like
awesome.
Laser cannons, knives. This dude's swinging a gun.
Yeah. There's
so much shit to see there. It's like
that is totally.
This dude has some kind of hammer, three pronged, fucking war hammer.
Don't make that gesture, please.
Sorry.
The whole Las Vegas scenes in here. There's a scene where Commandy is like in these underground caves and.
That's pretty
gets
crazy.
Gets thrown through a wall.
And then there's Commandy. He's like way in the back. Yeah. Like in a tiny little. Holy fuck.
It's so awesome.
I totally.
It's awesome.
I totally that relate awesome. To Jack Kirby. And not in that I'm anything really like him skill wise.
Oh, there's a lot of Kirby in
but,
your
but,
work.
But yeah. I honestly, I operate when I make comics. I have no ability to write. I don't know anything about dialogue or the English language in general.
Viscerally.
But I have ideas. And I feel like that's what comes through with Kirby's work. And that's why I wasn't the slickest
presentation.
Right.
But it was
tend to want to work with writers who will help me figure things out. Which is like, I have ideas of a guy who does this and does that, but I don't know what that guy says to that person and that,
whatever,
that kind of thing. And that stuff really, really appeals to me. It's just something that, like, that's how I work, and I totally understand it as I'm a visual person and I'm a storyteller, but I am certainly not a writer.
Well, there is a very apparent edge, and you can see dissatisfaction to what had come before whenever you read Commandy, because right on the first pages of every issue it says, you know,
fuck you. No,
it says fuck you, Stan.
Yeah. No,
forget what you read before.
No, it's written, drawn, edited by Jack Kirby. I mean, it's like. This is my creation. I'm writing it. I'm drawing it. I'm editing it. And well, this other guy is gonna.
All
is
right,
gonna
let's
eat
not.
It.
Do,
well, no, but I mean,
don't go Vince on me.
No, I'm not going Vince. But
you don't have to build up Kirby by tearing down someone else.
And I'm not tearing down Stan, but I think that is something about his DC work that is different than his Marvel work. Is that, you know, it is. Pretty pure Jack, and that's not always the best thing, but it is his unfettered ideas, which is
by the way I
exciting.
Love the paper in it too.
Oh, the paper's awesome.
Yeah, it doesn't smell bad at all.
It's like
other books.
It's not the glossy paper, like it looks
it's a really high quality newsprint.
I like it a lot.
Fantastic.
It's a great collection. I love these so much more than the archives, like this style. Like, because the archives felt like something that you shouldn't read.
Yeah.
They felt like something that you get in like
an archive.
Put that on the shelf and like
ooh,
you
la,
never
la.
Open
yeah,
the archive.
Yeah, yeah.
I like these because the inside feel like comics, and I like these better than the big Marvel omnibus, because you can actually sit down and read these.
Omnibus.
Those might actually like fall
yeah.
on
like
you.
The four
yeah.
one
yeah.
is
yeah.
like
that's why I haven't read the Holy Terror yet, because it feels too precious for me to open and read.
It's too precious of an item.
Read the Amazing Spider-Man omnibus, but you need to have a spotter there
the
with
four
you.
The one is like
might crush you under
that is something like
that, the Frank Miller Daredevil one. You need to have someone there. Yeah.
Isn't that such a
help you read it?
Isn't that such a fucking comic book industry thing where someone's like, you know what we should do? We should put a book together that's so fucking thick that
this
no reasonable person would sit and could sit and read this book without a special position, or they have to lay it out.
Well,
like,
that's what I feel like the DC history of DC book. It's like, Well, we're just going to come up with the biggest fucking book
it's
ever
impossible
printed.
Okay. Yeah. All right, I'll change the subject.
I love it, though, but it is
it's awesome.
Have you, did you see that news story about the DC 52?
Oh, yeah, gigantic.
One book,
yeah, it's
all
huge.
Number ones, all 52 number ones, and one hardcover.
It's insane.
That is the
that
most
is
common
listen,
book.
Ridiculous.
This is how you read ridiculous. A Marvel.
You can't read that.
I have the Walt Simonson Thor.
It,
oh,
that
that's
is
awesome.
Like a,
no, it's
that's like
it,
criminally large. That is.
I so just beautiful. Prop it up on my cock because I have a giant hard on the entire time.
But you know, it's such a comic book
only,
thing.
If only you had three penises that would spread out and hold the right and left side.
It's like yeah. it's such a comic book thing, though. For like the last thing they consider is probably ease of read.
Oh,
like they were probably awesome. Like people want to read Simonson Thor. We put it all in one book. We can charge. Can people read it?
$900. How many? Who
we,
cares?
When
nobody
the fuck
reads
we
this
ever
shit. Nobody reads
when
comics.
When have we ever worried about what, if they can read it?
How many? How many pages can we get? 1,028.
I mean, yes. I do.
It's
like,
it's like a frat boy is fucking putting this shit together. Yeah. It's fucking awesome, right? Giant, like it's fucking awesome.
I have to say, the same mindset went into the big damn hard boiled that I have sitting underneath my coffee table.
It's just
that,
huge.
That is. I don't know what that book is. It's so oversized. It's oversized for oversized. And it is sitting on my coffee table just like getting kicked by people, getting, you know, dog-eared edges.
Nameless.
Like, there's nowhere to hide that book.
First thing I talked with Patrick about tonight is like, you're ordering the Wally Wood Artist Edition for me, right? He's like, yeah. And I'm in the back of my head. I'm like, I got nowhere. No idea.
I built shelves.
No idea where I'm
just
put
for
this
my
room.
Artist really Editions.
That
I
is
really
so
yeah,
shelves.
Yeah, I built shelves in my basement.
Comic book industry. The only they're just coming up with formats that no reasonable
make
person.
We our fans bookshelves.
And it's a wonder why the industry is fucking struggling. Right? Like, why is it that
we're all shitting our pants to buy books that we could not read anywhere like at home.
Yeah, the digital version is we're going to have files so huge we need to build new computers.
Exactly.
To read.
Like, yeah, I mean, it is
you're
going to
get every Batman book
it is
ever printed in one PDF.
Every page
it's
in 1,200 DPI.
It's one
is there any way,
1,200.
Is there any way I can get this Simonson Omnibus broken up? Why would you want to break it up? Why don't you want a 1,000-page giant book?
What's wrong with you? What the fuck?
I don't. I want to read it on the train. Fuck you. You.
But
read
it's
it on,
awesome.
You read it
way.
At home,
Tom. It's right. awesome.
You rip it. You rip it in 1/5 sections, and then you read that section on.
You go home and
don't
you lay
be
down.
Such a pussy.
Yeah. You
it's
lay
fucking
down.
Awesome. This
you put
way.
That
you're
on a lectern.
Comics are not
fucking
for cowards,
awesome.
Where people are like, I have a lectern for. I'm like, man, comics are so fucked up. People have like special.
I have.
Like it just can't like, just a book that you read. Like I, that
have,
I could put in my. I can.
No,
put this
I have
in
a
bag.
Podium. I have
you,
a podium.
He has a podium. He reads his comics.
Do you really?
I have a podium.
No, just kidding.
But it'd be cool, right? It'd be awesome if I did, right?
No,
it's like
no. Honestly,
it's like
he's talked about this before. He has a special desk that has a swing away like arm table that he can like.
It's like, you know, like Aliens, the second Aliens movie with the
gun?
Fucking Puerto Rican chick that like pulls the gun over. Yeah, I have that
guess,
for comics.
Yeah.
I wish
I have just like a big
again,
bionic arm I wheel in front of myself.
Once again,
and every page you read flies out like a shell.
Yeah.
Of,
to use my wife as an example, to see my wife's face when I got the Fantastic Four Omnibus number one, which isn't even the biggest omnibus, where she was just like,
what?
Are you an idiot?
Lightweight.
Yeah, like a psycho.
Like, where the fuck are you going to read that? How do you? I would just read it at home on the couch, sitting like this. Like this is the only way I can.
I need a harness.
Like,
I strap it in
talk,
like a
talk
fucking.
To me in 6 months was I when I bring when I build some sort of contraption to help me read it.
I strap it in like I'm a deep sea fisherman.
Yeah.
And read it in front of me.
It's like it says something so fundamentally weird that our most cherished editions are the most. Impossible fucking thing. Like, we just,
well, it's either you read it in incredibly enormous form, or you read it with kid gloves underneath glass with a magnifying glass.
Like, the only way to appreciate this book is to get it in a format which is inconvenient for you.
Yeah,
like, listen, this is easier for us to do it this way.
They want you to expend effort to read it. Definitely.
Sweat, baby.
Just my color. Just my kind. Your heavy soul. Next to me. Heart's on fire. Get no sleep. Drive all night.
So, Sal.
Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing good. No, what have I been reading?
Daredevil's still good?
Daredevil's fantastic.
Damn straight.
Daredevil's absolutely
I need to get caught up.
No, it's really... they've taken a completely
I'm waiting for the collected edition. I am, actually, at this point. I'm just like...
I mean, if you go back on this podcast, I have mentioned many a time, this is a great place to jump onto Daredevil. Daredevil's the one comic book that...
You've kind of always stuck.
I've always it's been my book. Like if there's as much as I love Captain America, Batman, Daredevil for whatever reason.
Yep, I'm the same place.
Always been there with Daredevil, and I've said over and over again, hey, this is a great. Every time there's a new creative crew on Daredevil, hey, this is great. Jump on here. Come on, get it. But honestly, this is
a great time to jump.
This is a great time to jump.
I would say right now this book is. As different as it has been since before Frank Miller took over.
That's going back a ways.
Long time ago.
Yeah, that's going back a ways.
This is not a grim and gritty. This is not a dark. This is a fun, exciting sort of devil may care. If Cary Grant was Daredevil, that's the this is how, who this character is now. He's the man without fear in a lot of different ways, but it's just a totally different feel.
The weight's been taken off.
Was it a welcome change? Yeah.
It was.
It's refreshing.
It really is. Yeah, because it's been so long of just
been ground down. To nothing.
Yeah. Frank Miller. He started the process of let's pile on Matt Murdock. Mm-hmm. Let's see how much he can take. Let's break him and then rebuild him. That and that has sort of been what every writer has done since then.
Yeah, and to be fair, and we've talked about Frank in not the best light, earlier.
what?
As Frank Miller's Daredevil run is one of the.
It was revolutionary. Fantastic. He took one of the greatest runs of all time. D-level character and turned him into
changed the industry.
Yeah, absolutely,
changed the industry.
No question. Yeah. He made Daredevil. Yeah. Daredevil probably would not be around if it wasn't for
I'm
Frank
not the
Miller.
Biggest Daredevil fan, and I like Frank Miller's Daredevil stuff.
It's amazing.
It's very good.
It's amazing. Well,
but this Daredevil is it's just a completely different take on it, and it's refreshing.
It's more
it's very much Silver Age-ish.
Who's it's fun. The swashbuckler Errol Flynn.
Errol Flynn. Absolutely. Yeah. It just took all the seriousness. Not all the seriousness, but the over,
piling on, comically depressing.
Yeah,
was how it was. It was almost. Yeah. It got to the point where it was almost really.
How much?
How many girlfriends can you kill?
Right.
How many
in front of them?
So you just drove your blind wife.
The beautiful thing is that Mark Wade, who is writing it now, didn't discount any of that stuff.
No,
he looked at it and he said, okay, well, what would that ultimately do to someone? How would that, how can I change this character to be lighter and more just friendlier, but not discount what happened before? And he said, at some point, you're just going to go, fuck it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like any human being.
If it doesn't
being,
kill
like,
you, it makes you stronger.
Yeah, fuck that. That's it. I'm done. Fuck. And he really did sort of exemplify the man without fear. It's like, I've gone through the worst shit that God can possibly pile on me. I have nothing left to lose. I have nothing left. Nothing else matters. Fuck it. I'm just going to be who I am. And he's free. That's really how I feel about
it. Well, it's also a good way to make you care again. It almost got to the point with Daredevil where so many bad things happened to him that it was hard to care anymore.
Yeah.
Because it almost becomes like... Oh, okay. Well,
again,
it becomes distracting from you. I become distanced from the character because you're just like, this is so ridiculous.
I think it was a brilliant idea by Mark.
And it lets it reset it so you could do bad things to him again. Like you
could eventually, right? Yeah, yeah. Eventually, like, you could get to that point again.
Okay. I just love that it's turned you into a big Mark Wade fan.
And I have to admit, never really a big Mark Wade fan before.
I've always
all right. So okay. Here's a reason to really care, which I think is very interesting. And I know Paulo, and I know he wouldn't mind me talking about this, and I think it's very, very interesting.
Remember, he saved your life.
Don't tell me that he's blind.
Yeah. Well. Okay. No. Here's the interesting thing about Paulo is that his work on Daredevil is inked by his father.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
And his father is a person who lives in Florida and has spent most of his life airbrushing palm trees and motorcycles. He does airbrushing kind of stuff. And Paulo, from what Paulo told me, he went home for a month and taught his father how to ink.
Jesus.
And taught his father how... I mean, his father's a very
good
artist. I
really hate this guy. But
But taught him how to ink his work. And so... And it's fantastic. He does an amazing job inking the work. And so it saves time for Paulo. And so Paulo can pencil and his father can ink. And like the whole experience is just like it's perfect. The art is amazing. It's the best work of Paulo's career.
Yeah.
And his father is inking it.
That's sick.
And Mark Wade is writing amazing stories, and it's just like it's fantastic. And then Marcus Martin is doing an amazing job doing the fill-in story arc so Paulo and his father can build up,
concentrate on.
Yeah. It's fantastic. It's something you don't see much of in comics, and
anytime
it's
have
amazing.
Marcus Martin as your fill-in artist,
you did something right.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's
you're
amazing.
In a good position. Where
it's totally amazing stuff. Everyone should be reading it.
No, I absolutely agree, and
I gotta get caught up.
It's I'm loving it. I love the fact that they made the decision to go the direction that they're going. I think they're doing an amazing job with it. Fantastic. I love it. Read it. Please.
They have kind of gotten as deep as you could go.
Yeah, at some point, let's just have
fun.
Yeah, holy shit! And nothing
that's
against the right, I love Bendis.
I love the Bendis.
I love the Miller. You know what I mean? Like
the Brubaker
stuff. Yeah.
There's a lot of great stuff. And
absolutely,
Andy Diggle's
a really good writer. But
nothing against any of those guys.
That character had been through the meat grinder at that point. There wasn't much.
It was
to
time.
Work with.
It was time, and congratulations to Wade and whoever else was involved. Paulo and I don't want to discount artists or anyone else involved in it, but congratulations on making the decision. Because honestly, I think it's a brave choice to sit there and go look at something that's been relatively successful for a while in a certain way, and then going, no, we're going to go completely opposite of that and do something different.
Yeah.
That's brave.
Everyone's been trying to be Frank Miller for 20.
Well, Bendis
years
had
now.
Said it a long time ago.
It was a love letter.
It's really hard not to write a love letter to Frank when you're doing.
Yeah.
Hello, ladies.
But I love Bendis's Daredevil.
Oh,
I thought it was so much fun, I don't know when Brubaker started, like the prison sequence
was
fantastic.
Yeah.
It just needed something different. And this is perfect. It's perfect for the character.
It's the right time for it. It just works, and if you're not reading it, it deserves a wide audience. It's a brave choice on it, and
it's just fun.
It's just fun.
It's just if you've never read Daredevil before, it's fine. It's just fun.
Yeah.
So I would say it's a perfect time to jump in.
I've said it before, but I really fucking mean it.
I caught up on The Flash.
Oh,
fantastic.
Good.
I do like
the Manipal stuff?
Yeah. I do like the Manipal.
Perfect artist for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. It's really good to have the writer be the artist in this case because he spends a lot of time doing interesting looking stuff with The Flash, which should really be.
This isn't fair. Sal's got a Daredevil that he loves. You have a Flash you're happy with. Where's my fucking Alien Legion comic?
Listen.
Alien Legion.
It's a Flash comic,
How about Doctor Who? You got a Doctor Who?
Not so good.
I have another one, too, but go ahead, Tom. Keep going.
But I think it's just refreshing in this case, to have the artist be the writer as well and sort of directing it, because
the auteur,
he puts things in it to sort of build up the how cool the Flash visually can look, which I think was something that had been sort of lacking.
He is made for drawing a Flash.
Yeah, I know. It's great. He's absolutely perfect for it. And he doesn't have sort of, I don't think he has an over reverence for Barry Allen, which I think hampered the Geoff Johns stuff a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think sometimes when people really want to write a certain character and then they get to write it, it's sort of a curse disguised as a blessing.
Right,
like it can
be,
like you said with Bendis, sometimes when you love something, you write a love letter, and sometimes the love letters aren't that much fun to read because you're just kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, well, you really like him. So, I get it, you know.
Remember that time when the Kingpin really fucked you up?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think sometimes it's good to get somebody that maybe doesn't have that same, not that Francis Malpaul doesn't like The Flash, but doesn't have that same desire to write sort of a love letter to some vision.
You mean like Aquaman?
I think 100%. Francis just likes fast things and dynamism and it looks cool, intensity, and like he loves that visual.
The inertia.
He just loves it. Yeah.
And it's cool. And it, you know, to not every story has to be like Frank Miller's Daredevil, where it's like a dissection of like someone's psyche. Sometimes you can just have a comic that just like looks really cool.
Hey,
and has
a
like
bank robbery.
I feel like The Flash especially was one of the 52 comics that really presented itself the way I personally wanted it to be, was a just like, here, this is fun. Why don't you read this? Why don't you pick up this?
It's a bright, colorful story.
Why don't you read it, and then you're going to continue to read it because you're interested in what's happening. And
it's a bright, colorful character.
And that I thought it being very, very successful.
Talking about The Flash, there's a, going back years and years, a couple of years.
Yeah.
Darwin Cook's
New Frontier.
New Frontier.
Okay. Years
ago. Tom, it's a couple of years. Right, three years ago?
Four or five years ago.
Four or five
years
ago. I still remember to this day, and every time I read that, because I read it all the time, one of my favorite books of all time.
Yep.
I always remember Tom talking about the scene where
Barry kisses
Iris, and how much reverence Tom had for that. And I remember when I read it, I was just like, oh, well, you know, it's kind of a cute thing, but I never really understood it. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't have the same feeling of that particular scene that you did. Until later, now that I've read more Flash, more Barry, and sort of come to understand that character more from your perspective and how much you love that character.
Yeah,
I do.
It's my favorite character, obviously.
Talked hours and hours
about it.
And to make it, you know, long story short, but it, just the... Once again, just like congratulations to Darwin Cook for being able to distill that
into one page,
one scene in every character in that book. Like, he, you know, and it, just going back,
That's what he's gonna do with Watchmen 2.
I hope you are right. Distill it all down.
The scene where Rorschach kisses Night Owl.
Yeah, I mean, to get it. Because he did a really good job, because he also did a great job of, you have to, he had the Flash doing fast things, and then also had the Flash doing things that were personally interesting, which Francis Manipal is also doing quite well. You got to have both of them. You know, like, sometimes I think people get really caught up in, like, writing a story where you never see the Flash or Daredevil or any of them do any superhero stuff, you know,
or he does something so like molecular and just like kind of,
it's not dynamic.
Just kind of like, guess what, the Flash was in you 12 seconds ago and you didn't know it and now you're dead. You know,
it's not very fun to look at. Sometimes like you get very caught up in the story and you're like, oh, I didn't have like Daredevil fight anybody.
Right. No, absolutely. I think it's happened. I mean, we could look at a decade.
Yeah.
You know, and that's.
And not that every comic has to be a fight scene, but sometimes you get so caught up in it, you're like, wait a second. like the root of this.
We're trying
is something
to do. We're trying
different.
To do something, and it's taking away from what comics do really well.
The strength of it. Yeah, the strongest part of it is like the visual of this guy in a red suit doing something.
Running
know,
really
very
fast.
Strong, right. If, whether it's a dark version of Daredevil, you know, where it's very muted colors, there's still a very powerful visual that comics provide that sometimes we like wander away from in trying to be movies or trying to be, you know, like something.
No, absolutely.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, we can go back to Commandy. It's like you never for a second forget that what is happening is really fucking cool.
You're never two panels away from a punch being thrown.
Yes.
Or like something being
That's
shot.
That's a motto. Like you should, that should be a motto for every.
On my business card, you're always one panel away from being a punch being
That's,
thrown.
That's honestly, in Commandy, you're never two pages away from a scene change.
Yeah, like it's always, there's always a scene change. Someone's always getting punched.
He's
the gun's always getting shot.
He's in a cave on one panel, and literally the next panel, he's on downtown Las Vegas.
And
one panel to the next.
Nothing against like sort of slower, you know, like build up in comics or films or like, you know, really sort of, you know.
It happened.
But guess
what?
That's
good. That's good.
I'm getting older every single day. I'm going to die soon. I don't have time for that shit. I don't have time for slow.
Just get to it.
You know what I love in the Commandy book, and this isn't a spoiler because it's such a minor point. Like at the beginning, his like grandfather gets killed in the first two pages. In a modern comic, that would be like an entire arc.
Oh, an epic.
But it's like an acknowledgement. Right, right. That's not what the story is about. Like, this is something that moves you towards the actual story that you want to tell. You know, so it's just like you don't dick around with like, oh my God, what is, you know, like, listen, the real story is he's about to get into a fight
with
a
tiger.
With a talking
with a
tiger.
And a knife.
Yeah. There's going to be a war between tigers and apes in Las Vegas.
Oh,
so let's move past
fantastic.
The grandfather is second.
If you ever want to see the perfect example of that, read the Batman Chronicles, the first volume, the like Detective Number 27. It is the Batman origin in one fucking page.
Well, that's all you need.
Oh, yeah.
If you do it right, that's all you fucking need. You know, I'm smart enough to figure that shit out. What the hell?
It's
did
like
I read?
The All Star Superman where he gives the origin like in three panels at the beginning. Where it's just listen,
is.
You every
explosion.
My dad knows Superman's origin. Listen, you don't need to explain that he's an alien from another world.
Haunt. The Todd McFarlane and Robert Kirkman. It was new creative team. Joe Casey and one of my favorite artists, Nathan Fox, just took it over issue number 19. I haven't read Haunt since the first issue. I have no idea. You know, like I read the first issue. I didn't read another one. I read this one because I really like Nathan Fox. You know what? I'm smart enough to figure out what happened in between issue 1 and issue 19. You
don't
have
know.
To explain it to me.
I don't
me.
Know.
No, I you know, hey. And that's I think the problem a lot of times we don't appreciate the audience enough. We think we have to dump I keep saying we you fucking comic book creators.
Did you get a ring? Did
you
right.
You're talking about the White Sox?
Yeah.
You know what? It's a but it's like a thing with like when you aim, it's
low?
All well. It's aim you aim towards
low and wide
toward a child. You know, it's like where it all stems from, and the idea is that you didn't spend so much time on the origin because, like, the kid wants to get to Superman fighting Titano. You know, the giant ape. Superman. He doesn't want to spend like.
That's not, no.
12 pages.
By kid, you mean me?
Me?
As well.
Yeah, I know.
Me as well.
He doesn't want to see Paul
the
Kent
kid
have,
in
have
all
the
of
hardest.
But the part, the part that's the thing that comics do really well is like you get to that part. That's like can be like the meat of the story, you know, and you don't always have to spend all the time doing it.
Yeah,
you can sometimes, but you don't have to do it all the time.
Yeah.
And it's always very nice to have sort of a exciting.
Well, you know, as I said before, like. The story going to huge visual moments is me, you know, and I'm sure other artists and writers working towards visual moments because you don't know how to write. It's like, well, here's what I want to draw, and here's what I want to draw, and here's what I want to draw.
I have a scene.
And
I have
it,
an idea.
How does it progress between each scene? And that's
would you like to work in Marvel style?
Probably, yes. Yeah. And I have worked in Marvel style.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's just kind of like...
But with yourself, where yeah. you're like, Ryan, go draw this.
Oh, my gosh.
And you come back and it's like, well, Ryan,
if you want to see my script pages, uh-huh. my script pages are thumbnails of the action. And then a piece of paper that is written one sentence of what happens on each page. And that's how I work.
Okay.
Whatever works, man.
You work Marvel style with yourself.
Just send just send that stuff to me and I'll write the dialogue. And then I'll send it back to you and we'll be right. good.
Well, most of my dialogue is swear words. So. All swear words.
We have some voicemails, or not voicemails, we have some
emails. I have a couple of emails.
Really? Yeah, people have emailed the show? A
couple of people.
Oh,
emailed.
My God.
This one I thought was particularly
I haven't gotten these emails. Are they emailing you directly?
Yes.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Well, no, every email comes to me.
Okay.
I only share with you what I want.
Oh, you edit
share.
You edit your
yes.
email?
Yeah, yeah. I'm censoring for your benefit.
I don't know if I like that.
Well, it doesn't matter. All right, this is from Rajiv Kemlani.
Okay.
He says, hey guys, don't know if you remember me. I'm Raj, that guy in China who was attempting to catch up on all your episodes.
Yeah.
Well, I did just in time for you to announce that the show was ending.
yeah.
Since then, the monthly format return has been welcome return to my ears. Welcome back to Chicago, Mr. Tom. Your Tom versus the Jella.
It's Caters.
Your it's Tom versus the JLA/Aquaman podcast has got me into the DCU, and now with the launch of the new 52 and my handy dandy iPad, I'm enjoying reading several titles on a monthly basis.
DC should really pay me.
For actual print, I get myself a trade of DMZ or Why the Last Man now every couple of months. I just wanted to say thank you again for getting me into comics beyond just the movies/cartoons. And I'm looking forward to new episodes when you discuss curling, drinking, baseball, and maybe the odd comic too. Take care, Raj.
Oh,
I just thought that
cool.
was
that's, cool.
That's,
nice.
That's a fucking cool email from a dude in China.
My curling is going well. I'm having a little issue
oh,
with
no.
my release right now. the leg kick is a little strong, and I'm not hitting the broom
well,
exactly
yeah,
how I'd
yeah.
like to. But you know, hopefully the second half of the season.
That's the sweeper's fault. Sweeper needs to take care of your errors.
Have you broken a broom over your knee yet in frustration?
I have not, but I had to change broom heads last week because it just wasn't getting the job
to
done.
To a finer bristle?
A more coarse bristle? Well, I'm actually using this very apparently almost illegal Canadian blend.
Performance enhancing.
It
Brussels.
Is kind of a performance enhancing.
Well, you know, you are a big follower of the Cardinals and
Mark McGuire. You're
the
Mark
McGuire.
You know what? Championships talk.
Yeah, hey, yeah. you know, it doesn't all matter right. how you win.
Losers
right?
walk.
Chris is older than we think he is, just like Pujols.
All right, do we have another email?
I do have another one. This is from Brett Voller. He said, hey, guys, I recently picked up a giant-sized Kramer's Ergot.
Ooh,
Seven, and it blew my mind. Have any of you read it, and can you comment on the unique format? I was really taken away by it. Really unique experience for the medium. Thanks, Brett.
I have not read it.
I wish I was in a Kramer's Ergo. I wish. That's all I can say.
I haven't read any, Chris,
if anyone from Kramer's is listening out there, I want to be a part.
I flipped through.
Oh,
it.
You want to be a part of it creatively?
Like,
oh yeah, yes, definitely. Yeah, yeah. Well, what do you think I meant?
Well, no, I thought you meant you wish you read it.
No. Like, sorry.
Yeah, I was gonna say you just get one.
No, because I'm ready to be in the next edition.
Oh, gotcha,
I'm sitting here
just
waiting,
saying, just
by the phone, waiting.
Waiting. Gotcha.
I don't own one. I've flipped through them. They're amazing. The Kramer's Ergot that he's talking to.
I think I have one.
Ergol.
It's huge.
It's
books in big format.
I knew you'd think they'd find room for me.
It's not a coffee table book. It is a coffee table.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you can put legs on it.
Clever wordplay, Mr. Neesman.
But, no, I mean, yeah, they're
I'm writing that down.
Taking note of that.
No, I mean, they're amazing. I would like to get a hold of one, but they're hard now to find them.
Wait, you'd like to get a hold of a hard one?
I'd like to get a hold of a hard one. Wow. No, they're interesting. I mean, they sell out. They don't print a whole lot of them. So
it's small press.
Yeah,
small
and stuff. So they go out of print, and once they're gone, they're gone. But
SPX.
It was the first like ridiculously large book that I had seen, and that's kind of. The Little Nemo,
big dick so like books. Big, that's coming
huge,
next.
So
huge. It's going to be giant.
Yeah. So
giant.
Yeah.
Ryan
good.
And I
yeah,
are
they're neat.
Yeah. Big dick comics.
Oh yeah, we're working.
Oh yeah,
on it. In progress.
The big bang.
Highly
comics.
Censored.
Do we have any other emails?
No, that's it. That's all I got.
If you would like to email the show, you can certainly do so at info@aroundcomics.com.
Send us an email. We may read it on the show.
Yeah,
or
you
Ryan,
may ignore
especially
it.
If it's
and delete
Ergo
it.
Or Big Dick.
Ryan
could be anything.
Do you have anything that's coming out soon?
No, I don't. I'm going to be in a new Kramer's Ergo. Hopefully.
This is legally
me.
Binding. This, if we get this notarized. They
Brian Azzarello, and you are working on...
Kramer's Ergo number 8. the entire thing is done by us. It's going to be awesome. No, I do...
That would be kind of awesome.
That would be really good, right?
Brian Azzarello and Ryan Brown and, you know...
It's too much crazy. Too much crazy.
What I am working on
God
is...
God hates spacemen.
What I am working... I know. Man, his new Vertigo book is exactly what I want to be working on.
It's really good.
Man,
crazy good.
If only I was better than Edouard Rizzo.
That guy is so nice.
Hey, I'm a really big fan of yours.
Oh, man, he's so good.
Yeah.
He is.
He's
No. I wasn't at all suggesting I was better than him.
He's pretty amazing.
Any
awesome.
Universe ever.
I own a
someday.
Page.
He's like 40-something years old, so someday. You're like, what, 12?
Yeah, and he's handsome, and he can grow a full goatee,
yeah,
which
true.
I cannot
this is
do.
True.
So,
someday,
yeah, that's something.
Is there a big rift in the artist community between those with goatees and those that...
Goatee-less?
Are goatee-less.
Yes. And it was just started right now. You like, just suggested it, and it's going to happen.
Oh, I could grow one if I wanted to. I choose not to.
Oh, yeah. I work at home all day long. No one has to criticize my facial hair. And I can grow whatever I want.
But the goatee is kind of like, it takes some effort to make it just a goatee. So it's kind of like
you got to shape it.
Yeah,
you gotta
I mean, you gotta
yeah, work.
Of course,
but it's a little work.
It's embarrassing if you don't.
So anyway, Ryan, what you're working on? What can people purchase?
I'm trying to grow some a goatee. It's not working.
It's not turning out well.
On his balls.
Don't know.
I don't know.
Okay.
He told me.
Things you're working on.
Artistically. Oh,
books.
Okay.
Not like not yourself.
Not hair. Not body hair.
Not your ball hair.
Well... Oh, man, this is gross. Okay, so I'm working on a book for IDW called Smoke and Mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
That's being written by Mike Costa, who writes G.I. Joe Cobra and is writing the new Blackhawks for DC 52. And we're doing a creator-owned book for IDW that's 5 issues and is about sleight of hand magic.
Ooh.
And
oh,
it,
I love that.
Yeah.
We're Smoke and Mirrors.
And, Smoke and Mirrors, exactly. And it's being co-written by John Armstrong, who is a sleight-of-hand magician, a very well-known sleight-of-hand magician. And he worked for Disney as an Imagineer and is
That's
working...
That's a job?
Yes.
Yes.
Imagineer.
A very highly touted, very well-respected and... every fucking artist that ever has wanted to work for Disney wants to be an Imagineer.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he's been an Imagineer, and he is working on creating the...
I could be making that up, though.
Tricks. The tricks that are in every issue of Smoke and Mirrors. The point of Smoke and Mirrors is that it is a narrative, but it's also has tricks that are played on the reader, but they are also explained to the reader. So
wait, am I going to look at my long box and find my wallet?
Yeah. Like, basically.
My watch is at the end of this issue.
Yes.
My wedding ring. My Costa just mailed me my wedding ring.
The book is going to fool the crap out of you. The point is the book is going to fool you.
No, so I'm a huge fan of close-up magic.
Yes.
Like, and, you know,
uncomfortable magic.
Uncomfortably close
magic. No.
That's the hardest.
Show
it's
me
the
on
hardest
the
magic.
Doll
I mean,
the,
hey,
magician,
you know, David Copperfield, right? That's his name?
Copperfield.
Yeah, he could, like, do a huge stage thing, but
makes
the dude who's doing,
ball,
like,
yeah,
you know.
The David
in,
Blaine
right,
kind
yeah,
of stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right in front of you, that's way harder to fucking do.
Right.
So I buy this comic. There's going to be tricks pulled on me as
yes.
I read the comic. And that, then later explain to me how they're done.
Well, some of them are explained to you if you go back and analyze what you've been given information-wise. Some of them are flat out explained to you. It is a question of, I mean, it is stuff that a sleight-of-hand magician would do right in front of your face. But they're telling me everything that I need to do visually so that when it gets to you, it's going to trick you. And
that's cool.
It's weird. It's weird. It's kind of stuff that once you know the answer, it's kind of cool. But when you don't know the answer, it blows your mind.
Yeah, you're like,
and so they have to tell me the answer so I can figure out how to draw it. And then when it gets to you, it's awesome. It's awesome stuff.
That's a very cool idea. That's,
yeah,
yeah,
it's
I mean,
a neat concept.
I haven't seen anything.
It's pretty
like
unique
that in comics.
Yeah, I you know, I finished the first issue, and the first issue is mainly just simple card tricks. But then in issue two, we're going to get into actually you have to cut up the pages to change the narrative. It's
sort of a Promethea.
It's going to be.
Wow, you guys are getting a little deep.
We'll see if it works.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and I'm working currently on the incentive cover for number one that has a trick on the cover. So there's instructions on the cover that you follow, and you look at the image, and it works a trick
on the
reader. I
fucking love this book.
Yeah.
This
it's
is awesome.
Exciting.
This is very cool.
It's
this is very
as
cool.
As far as we can tell, no one's ever
shit,
done
I may have
like
to
this,
actually
so.
Buy, like, printed comic single issue
yeah.
what?
Stuff.
I
yeah,
hope
what?
So.
It's
I
been
hope
years.
So.
Like, that's insane. That's a very cool idea, though. That I love the idea of that. As a
visceral,
person who's,
yeah.
You know, I'm a huge fan of magic. I've always been, you know,
yeah.
And especially that close-up sort of hands-on magic like that. That, and I've seen some stuff online, like people have tried to translate that to the internet and done mm-hmm. some sort of things like that. But I've never really seen things like that in print. Actually trying to do, I mean, shit, I still have my, like, Harry Blackstone magic kit, you know, like when yeah. I was a kid, you know, that kind of thing. But it's doing that in print, that's very cool. That's
is that your greatest Christmas present?
It may have been, yes.
I
had a
coming
big
full circle.
No, I had a big, like, Harry Blackstone, was that his name?
That's the name, yeah.
Yeah, Harry Blackstone. I had gotten this huge Harry Blackstone magic kit, like all these.
Who's Harry Blackstone?
He was a magician. I don't know. He was just a magician. Old
yeah,
fucking.
He was on Night Court. Oh wait, no.
I think it was Harry Blackstone. Maybe
it was Harry Anderson.
No, not Harry.
He was
Anderson.
Also a magician.
Mel Torme. Okay, yeah. I now I understand.
Mel
Velvet
Torme.
Fog.
Maybe so, I'm getting the name wrong.
So it's coming out from IDW.
Yep.
It's going to be in previews this month.
Yes, and all then right. March. March is the first issue. It's
okay,
going to be a 5-issue miniseries.
Oh, so it'll be about the time of C2E2 that's coming out. So.
Yeah, it should be. The first issue has a variant cover by Fiona Staples,
oh,
which
nice.
We're super excited about.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah,
she's
great.
Amazing.
That's
all.
Any relation to Vel?
No, not at all.
But she does post on the Masters of the Universe forum.
Well, which Val is, you know, he is a master of the universe.
That's he owns that forum, man.
I know.
That's his community, man, big time.
Yeah,
I have a story
about
you
Val
after yes.
afterward.
Yes,
afterward.
Yes.
Where's Blast Furnace at?
Blast Furnace. I've done 130 pages, which is a half of a year. And it's taking a break right now.
Okay, on a little bit of totally understood because you're trying to get paid doing.
Oh yeah, oh,
doing
definitely.
Smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
God Hates Astronauts.
God Hates Astronauts is on a break. I did 13 pages of issue 3, and they hopefully I will finish the next 13 pages before the comic book season, comic show season of 2012, so that I will have issue 3 ready for the beginning of 2012. And then I will eventually be a little spoiler alert. I'm going to put it all together in a trade, and I'm going to try and write some origin two-page backups for the trade of the various characters.
Cool.
I just want to talk to you, the Around Comics listeners, for a moment.
you right there.
You.
With those white, earbuds.
Over the years, we at Around Comics, we pride ourselves with the ability to
sniff out talent.
Sniff out talent. I mean, yeah. You look at the comic
industry.
We're
talent sniffers.
Listen, yeah. You look at the current comic book industry and the professionals, the biggest names in
Fraction.
Comics.
Fraction. Found him.
Jason Aaron.
Oh, yeah. Early.
Hardman.
Oh, he was working in comics.
Before anyone knew
the second time.
I was, you know, that kind of thing. All these guys, all the guys that are working at Marvel, DC, Scotty Young. He begged to be on our show.
Yeah.
Remender?
Rick Remender, Tony Moore. All these guys. We know talent when we see it.
Bloodhounds.
I'm telling you right now, this guy sitting here, Ryan Brown, is a talent.
Oh, right. We're talking about Ryan.
We're talking about Ryan.
Tom's really rejected right now. It's like, oh.
Jump on the bandwagon early. If you're not reading Ryan's work, go out now and buy his book.
Now,
I'm telling you. Yeah.
If you don't get on the train now, you won't be able to complain about how his old work was better.
That's right.
You don't start.
That's right. As I evolve,
when he sells out,
you won't be able to complain.
Yeah. When he talks about those useless douchebags camping outside of your financial institutions, you won't be able to say,
I knew him whenever he was on my
side.
I mean, like,
you need to be able to relate to me as an artist before I come out as a radical fundamentalist. And I totally blow your mind.
But seriously.
No, yeah. Yeah.
If you like comics, if at some point in your life you were 10, 11, 12 years old and, you know, sitting in your parents'
There's an
basement.
8-year-old right now who's like, I cannot relate. I've never been.
I know one 8-year-old.
All right. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
It's not the Sandusky podcast.
Oh, well, that
go,
is
go buy some Ryan Brown comics. He deserves it, but more than that.
You deserve it.
You deserve to enjoy.
When's the last time you did something for yourself?
Exactly.
Wow. So how much money do you want me to give you?
Well, 10% of it. Don't worry about it.
10% of all future sales.
The standard Around Comics tip.
Yes, that's right. We are kingmakers, Ryan, and if you don't, you know, pay your kingmakers, you don't become a king. Okay. That's how
Sounds
it works
good.
Here, no?
Yeah, because there's someone behind you.
And he's big.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you don't want to see that.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of other folks that we enjoy and enjoy their work, has been on the podcast before, we are currently recording in the Rogues Gallery at...
The empty Rogues Gallery.
It is being primed for their holiday show, so the walls are bare right now. But on this Friday, if you are in the Chicago area, they will not be empty because they will be filled with the art of our good friend Sal Abernathy, and that will be 7 o'clock this coming.
Fucker stole my name.
He did not.
Big time.
He did totally.
You should get mad.
Podcast name. He totally
get
stole
mad.
My podcast moniker.
There's a lot of debate on who was first, but
no debate.
You guys,
whose side are you on, motherfucker?
You guys can debate it this Friday, December 10th at 7 o'clock. Because that is the Sal Abernathy art opening here at the Rogues Gallery.
Yeah, so, boy.
Yeah. Sal's good people.
No, good man.
He is a little bit of a Cubs fan, and we argued. Not argued, but we talked feverishly in New York.
It's a Theo era, man. Theo era.
Uh-huh.
Changing it.
Yeah,
it's
gonna
still
change.
The cups.
It's gonna, yeah, exactly. All right, do we have anything else?
Happy birthday to John Suntress.
Happy birthday, John Suntress.
He's 74 years old today.
Nice.
We appreciate that he
big
survived 75
next
year.
Yeah.
Way to survive.
Who would have thought when he was learning at Marconi's knee that he would live past the age of radio and the age
when
of internet?
When he was getting water for whoever did the yellow kit. Who did the yellow kit?
Bring me water for this radio mill that I'm working. We need to keep it rolling.
So very happy birthday to our friend John Suntress. All right, well this is our December issue. Have a fantastic
holiday,
Christmas, Kwanzaa, and
merry happy Christmas.
God, we'll be back.
Happy
in,
New Year,
2012. We have one more year left.
Oh, and that's the last year, right?
Yeah, that's it. We have one more year.
May is it supposed to end in May or whatever?
When does
March,
the calendar
May,
run out?
I don't know.
I gotta start making plans. I'm going to New York in January, so I got spring training in March, folks.
I don't know.
Me too.
Oh my God, that means that the Cardinals are going to be the very last World Series
champions. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, and it's on December 21st.
No, no.
Of 2012. Yeah.
Shit, they got to repeat.
Good luck.
They do have to repeat.
Good luck without Pools.
Yeah. Good luck.
Oh yeah. All right. Well, we will.
Whatever team Albert Pujols signs with, other than the Cardinals, I'm gonna buy a jersey.
I know.
I'm gonna wear it every day.
That's
for
hurtful.
At least three
you know.
Months.
I never thought I was gonna wear a Cubs jersey until I was gonna wear a Mark Burley Cubs jersey.
But he's not
to
signing
wear.
The Cubs. He's gonna be a Marlin.
Not,
baby.
Marlin.
Come on.
You got Marlin. You got a Marlin Burley. Possibly a Marlin Pujols.
All right. We will be back in 2012.
Yeah.
See
yeah.
you in
unless
the future.
Unless we're back sooner.
Yeah.
I doubt that.
In the meantime.
In between time.
Thank you, sir. Ryan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. We'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
Look at here. That's what it's going to be. Have everything I need. Around my sober Christmas tree. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, I love you, have good cheer, I love you, good dog, got my baby, my best love, happiness, good God, I got plenty of, would you believe, peace of mind, and I'll be grooving at Christmas time. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Hope you have a good cheer. I love you, James Brown, love you.
Well, okay, Yeah, Ryan's a fellow bourbon fan, so I figure we should break out some holiday cheer here.
Wait. What? I love
Shit.
Bourbon.
We're breaking out the old granddad?
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, some old granddad, so.
That's
fantastic.
That's not
I
bourbon,
have not had
it?
Enough alcohol tonight. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I have I've dipped into the old granddad before.
Hey.
Oh.
This one.
Oh. Keep that to yourself, maybe. I've dipped.